Kutardamaste. Welcome to the show. It's our first Tuesday coffee. I have a fun one. Do you know what this is right here, Jack and John?
It looks like a biscotti.
Dry ass bread with some chocolate.
It is a biscotti.
With sugar and salted caramel.
That's bullshit. I want the almond ones from freaking Costco, but I only get them once a year during workshop.
I found a new brand. It'll be at my workshop for sure, even though it's not sourced locally from a bunch of farmers.
I did eat sugar recently. We were in Vegas, and Dorothy's like, we haven't had a freaking donut in like a decade. Let's go get a donut from Krispy Kreme. I got I got diabetes looking at it.
did you like it?
No, it was fucking terrible, because even though it was like a plain blueberry cake one, they still stick it in that glaze, and they must leave it in there for like an hour. I ate two bites of it and threw it away. I'm like, I can't fucking eat this. Like, my heart started beating really fast, and my A1C was 97, and like, I was like, I can't do this.
That's good. Now you won't.
I won't.
Did you end up with the gut stomach ache later? Like,
no, because I literally ate two bites of it. Dorothy got some with some frosting shit on it. She ate one bite and like, nope, that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and got a, what's that thing with the corned beef? Another pastrami, a Reuben.
Reuben sandwiches.
I only got a Reuben, ate the fuck out of that. It was worth the bread. It was
had
worth
one
it.
Yesterday.
So while people were glued to their TVs, watching the ice storm sit on top of them because they couldn't walk outside and see that ice or snow was falling and it was cold.
Yeah.
I started sauerkraut, and as a result of this action, I have sauerkraut now.
Excellent.
And I didn't waste 3 days staring at the television or however long it was.
That's cool. The fermenting bug has gotten into me too. I went out and I made some it was short ribs, but it was really made out of brisket. So short brisket for this weekend. And I bought some stuff to go in it, including like a little package of parsnips.
Yeah.
And I only use like one big ass parsnip in there. So I'm going to make some fermented carrots. I'm like, throw some parsnips in there too. So I'll let you know what a fermented parsnip tastes like next time.
I bet it's
that
good.
Sounds good. I'm doing a whole themed meal on Friday of my workshop, which is the celebration of my 10th anniversary as a podcaster, fermented. Because Sandor Katz is coming, and so I was like, I'm going to make some like corned beef or something and just do a whole lunch. And, of course, John, you and Amanda, even though I haven't said it, are always invited. I'll send the date to her in case you just want to come out for that one day. But
you know what? We need a fucking John Willis abduction squad.
Okay.
I know exactly who to talk to.
We need like four dudes, like with airsoft guns, because he's going to totally cry if he gets shot with an airsoft gun, to roll up in there, throw his ass in a truck, and bring him to the holler. I'm looking for hands up in the live stream for people willing to go get John Willis and abduct his ass for one day. He can come to fermentation day at the holler. And SOE tactical gear will not dissolve into the ether. It will still be there when you go back, bro.
I'll find them a room that's not like the trash hotel.
I have to get a fucking room. Get a fucking room if he comes. If we have to abduct his ass, he's hanging from a tree until morning.
Also, we are folding that into the Jack does all of his appetizers thing. And then from there, we have a whole roasted lamb.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good day.
Get into that now. Okay. Just how do I get it to you?
No, we talk is what we do. Or we email or text.
I give you.
I can start ferments here. Yeah.
There when I get there. Yeah, because I don't want to have like a jar of fermented escabeche in my luggage on the airplane to Nashville.
Right.
Yeah.
No, we've got a team here ready to ferment. The team keeps getting bigger in the holler. So.
And you're too far to drive, and I'm not taking my car up your fucking road and driveway. That's not happening. I won't have a transmission by the time that's over with.
That's possibly true. It's the shocks that really get taxed on my road, if I'm honest. Yeah. So
I'm just thinking like the angle of apex from your driveway to your road, and I have about 2 inches of ground clearance. I don't think that's going to work.
So it's not a 4-hour drive. It's a 2-hour and 45-minute drive that you have to control an angry John. But I've noticed nobody's raised their hand as willing to abduct John in the comments. So apparently you're doing something right there, John.
Have you guys heard this stuff they're trying to pass in Florida that you as a small scale natural farmer are not allowed to speak ill of a large scale farm, anybody doing, you know, you're not allowed to point out that cage free birds doesn't mean that they're outside and such as that they're trying to pass in Florida. I heard that this morning.
I did not hear about that, but that's bullshit if they're trying to do it, obviously.
Oh, like, I'm sure somebody's trying to do it.
I'm sure. Well, you know, it's just like they tried to pass and it will come back. So there's like, everybody's excited because we kept people from, we kept this bill at bay that, you know, people using pesticides and herbicides would be protected from lawsuits in Tennessee. And everybody got mad and called their representatives. So it went away. It didn't go away. It went on hold until the next time they bring it up or they slide it in another bill. So them trying to not allow free speech does not surprise me. I've seen what they've done on labels at the FDA level.
Yeah. I mean, just like, you know, talking about milk and such, you're not allowed to point out that your milk is not, you know, vaccinated milk or GMO milk and such.
Funny you should say that. I'm enjoying milk kefir made from my herd share.
Mm. Well, you're going to double die now.
Mm-hmm.
Double
try. I've got live microorganisms in it.
Oh, that's poisonous.
It's totally poisonous.
I am jazzed about meeting Sandor. I've read his stuff for years. I've never met him, so that's cool.
Yeah, Florida was also the state that told people to take up their gardens from the front yard or they would do it for, I mean, sure. That happens all over in HOAs.
Yeah, that's more an HOA than a state level thing.
Yep.
I think it'd be interesting to see somebody try to relocate somebody's garden where I live. I would sell fucking pay-per-view tickets. It would be fun.
But yes, Sandor lives near me, Jack.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I've known that for years. I've had him out one other time. And our audience was a little, not militant towards him, but militant towards each other. And he didn't quite understand they were joking with each other.
Oh.
This time I reached out, I'm like, so things have changed around here a little bit. Well, but yeah, we might tease each other, but it was like full on shooting Jake with airsoft guns militant for his session the first time.
But he needs it. But do you see how far he's come?
Yes.
Is there not an inflection point in the annoyance of Jake Graff that like it was just exponentially rising to the point where Jake was going to destroy the world? Then about 2017, 2018, we shot him in the ass for the first time, and now he's a normal, rational person. I take some credit for that. I think it was a brilliant idea. I'm glad that you took the torch and ran with it. And now we have a new and better Jake.
Well, isn't he the one who inspired you for the 5 o'clock club?
He did. He did, which is shocking to me still that something that good came from him. But he also likes the book, which is fucking terrible. So I feel better about it now. But I mean, really, at my last workshop, when I talked to him, after about a day, when I realized he wasn't just faking it, I'm like, what is different about you? You're not neurotic. You're not annoying. You're on time. Those are three things that are not Jake. And he said, I'm doing the 5 a.m. club. And I'm like, okay. And I didn't have time to jack with it. But then I was like, that sounds like a thing, not just a thing that Jake came up with. So I looked it up and it's Robin Schwarma, I think, is the guy that put the book out. The book's awful. It's so bad. I mean, I shouldn't say that because books are like music. Like what I like, you may hate, and what you like, I may hate. Like that's normal, but it's just, I don't know, it's quirky dialogue and all. But I found another dude. I can't think of his name now. He put his, it's called The Miracle Morning. He put his book out like 6 years earlier, and it's basically the same thing. I'm not saying anybody lifted anybody's shit because, you know, Ben Franklin, early to bed, early to rise, healthy, wealthy, wise. So it's a well-known principle. But it's changed a lot of things for me. My productivity is through the fucking roof.
Which is great.
The last week in Vegas, I didn't do it. And now it's hard to get. Don't quit.
Now you're dragging butt in the morning.
Don't quit once you start, man. It's hard. It's hard once you start again.
Yeah, John knows a thing or two about getting up early. He's sitting here going like, yeah, guys, I've been doing that the whole time.
What did you go to Las Vegas for?
SHOT Show.
No shit.
You're filling out paperwork. But there was this band called the Eagles there playing this place called the Sphere. And that was pretty awesome. And then we went and saw this movie from the 30s that's probably made more money in the last year than it ever did in its existence, called Wizard of Oz. atmosphere. And we hung out with our in-laws, and I don't gamble, so I didn't do any of that.
So you did not spend much time at SHOT Show?
No, but enough.
Got it. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I remember inviting you, and you're like, yeah, I don't go to SHOT Show.
Well, we didn't get in there in time to do it this year, but my favorite thing to do at SHOT Show, you have to have a media pass to do it, is Media Day at the Range. Mm-hmm. That's the coolest fucking shit to do, because you go out to this big range, they give you a big bag of swag, and you shoot all the guns. The meetings itself and all, like, it's just so big, it's hard to actually get anything done. It's overkill, in my opinion. You don't go anymore either, do you?
No, we haven't been out in, I don't know, 10 years probably.
Yeah, I should have went when he invited me, because Kenny Barrett was there and shit, and they got a big house and partied and all, and that would have been cool, but it was like I didn't have time to go at that point.
That's a thing.
It's a commitment.
Go ahead.
I say it's a commitment, and I've made a new rule. I don't travel in fucking January anymore. Fuck that. No second half of January, no first half of February. That's when shit happens here.
So, like, what's it like to go to SHOT Show for 2 days or 3 days and come back a week later?
It was cold, and I didn't have a mailbox. Some asshole ran over my mailbox. They managed to knock my 600-pound concrete pillar out of the ground.
At the house?
At the house, yeah. Like, and the guy called. I mean, like, people are still decent. He called, like, the next day. He called the number on the gate, which was my wife's cell, and he told her he did it. And she said he sounded like an older redneck. He's like, I thought we could go out there and play in the snow with my truck. I was wrong. And apparently he hit it hard enough. I guess my house sitter didn't notice because it was cold as shit, so he didn't go outside. He was out there for 2 hours to get his truck movable again. And I'm convinced that concrete pillar saved my fence from its second destructive force in, you know, as many years. Because he stopped about 2 foot from careening the fence, and I mean he blew that thing right out of the ground. It's a 6-inch cylinder poured concrete with a giant concrete base into the ground, because we can only go about that deep, so it went wide, and he plowed it. He plowed it hard. David and JR Nicole are trying to figure out what to weld to replace it with.
Oh, that could be fun.
I was like, I know a place where you can get an old antique cow catcher from a train.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Just what's it going to cost me? Because right now I've got a 4x4 post with like four things temped out there. Because when your mailbox is on the ground, you know, they may not be stopped by rain or snow or sleet or dark of night. But getting out of the fucking truck to stick your mail in the box, yeah, they don't do that.
Yeah, I saw your picture.
Yeah.
I can attest that snow and sleet will stop them.
Yeah.
In Tennessee.
It has here. We were definitely not ready for it. Like we got snow, which is not a problem, and then it froze up, and then it rained, and then it froze up again, which has, like, we legitimately have like 3 inches of ice in places. I was in Jackson Saturday, which is about an hour from here, in a Kroger parking lot, and I was about 4 feet taking some video of this skid steer, and he's a commercial Bobcat skid steer with a blade on it, and he's chipping this ice, and as he backed up, it didn't do anything to the ice. We went in and ate, came out about an hour later, and they had loaded up, and I'm like, what's up? And they're like, we can't do anything with any of this ice in the shade. The equipment won't even touch it. There's nothing we can do. We've plowed this whole parking lot clean, so if you didn't have ice, you weren't going, nothing was happening. Like, we have ice out, or salt. I mean, if you didn't have salt, we have, our whole place is a sheet of ice right now. It's soft because we were up to 40 yesterday. So we can kind of shovel and chip some of the ice on the concrete. But had we had salt everywhere in Jackson that had salt, their parking lot was completely clean and completely dry.
Yeah.
But
people who are like, that's hardly any snow. You guys are wussies. I'm like, you don't understand. So I'm from Portland, Oregon, where we get ice. So I understood what was coming when they said ice. I was like, oh, I'm not going anywhere for a long time, and some stuff's going to fall. I wish didn't, basically. But it, John's right. You can't break it up. It's like, if you want to break it up, you take a sledge out there and you whack it, and then you come by with it. That's not some fun work at all.
And if it's on blacktop, you're going to destroy. Yeah. the parking
lot.
Yeah,
you can't. It won't.
Yeah.
It's harder than concrete in some ways, man.
Yeah, we're on gravel, so I could take the skid steer and just straight down bust it and move back and kind of, you know, with the blade and with a tooth bucket, but it completely has just moved all, there's mud now, right? There's no gravel. Once the ice goes away, we can smear it. We can smooth the gravel back down, but we had to get the gates open. We had, you know, 6-8 inches of frozen snow and ice in front of them. So we had to bust that out of there to even get to the farm area.
I have to say, I'm really glad I am a skier, 'cause I had all the clothing for it. I was out there in a ski suit every time to go. 'Cause the other thing is, you're on a farm, you have animals to deal with. They still want water and food. And, you know, I don't know how John, I'm pretty sure I do know how John does it. But yeah, you're like, you're making your ice pucks by dumping the ice water, right, out of the rubber things and then refilling them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really nice to do that in ski pants when it's snowing on your four-wheeler seat or whatever. So that's an interesting prep thing to think about.
Yeah, we use four-wheelers with a Rubbermaid tilt trailer. And we can haul water in the trailer or in buckets or pitchers or whatever. And then I have some big black Rubbermaid stock tanks. So as soon as the sun comes out, it can still be 10 degrees. But if the sun's out, it starts really melting that down. And then I just have a stock tank heater. And I just go from one stock tank, and then I move it the next morning to this one, and then just rotate back and forth. And then I can fill water into there if I need to out of IBC tote or anything. A lot of my hoses were buried this year, and I had new hoses in the feed shed, and when we hooked them up, the mice had chewed through them and such. So that was the first time that had happened, but not a big deal. We just used the rubber water bowls, and this year I just used a baby sledgehammer and just smacked the bottom, and the ice cubes come right out. And then the other thing to keep in mind when you're doing that 10 days in a row is you have these massive ice cubes that have now stuck to the ground that are like speed bumps. So I always pick those up and put them back in the stock tank to remelt.
Yep. So were you ever out of power, John?
We were only out of power like 3 hours on the first Saturday night. And the only reason we knew it was because it woke me up when the fan came back on. So we did lose power for a total of 5 hours. We didn't even know it.
That's amazing. Well, the reason I wanted to bring up ice today is it's become a bit dramatic in Nashville about the power outages, and down to people are dying in their houses because they don't have heat.
Yeah.
Which, as a prepper or a homesteader, I'm just thinking, you know, the first one I read about was a man in his 90s. I believe his child had checked on him the day before. He was cold, but in his house. And they left, and they came back the next day, and Dad was dead. And
that happened here too.
Yeah. It's like, if your dad is in his 90s and you're out of power, and I don't mean this as a blame thing, but that's a really good time to take Dad home with you. Or if you don't have power, maybe, because more people in one place is better when you don't have heat, because you're generating heat from your body. You can condense to a room and heat that room in an alternative way. But also, if the roads are passable, you can leave. It's actually okay to leave and go to a hotel or an Airbnb. Like, had I been in my Nashville place, which lost power for 7 days, I would have totally gone completely out of the city, even if I had alternative ways to heat, because it doesn't have a wood stove. And then the other thing we're seeing is a lot of people are running generators and going through $100 of gas a day to run space heaters. And there are other kinds of heaters that you can use you probably could have just bought the Big Betty for $100 or $150 and some propane and been like, that's better on your budget. But you have to open a window if you're using the Big Betty heater for the ventilation, right? So I don't know. John, what have you seen?
Most of it seems like it could have been prevented. Like, we did have somebody that died. I heard, you know, I'm reading on the local Facebook group. And there was 3 or 4 other people there with him, and nobody called for help. Nobody told anybody about it. You heard about it after the fact. And when people are like, well, why didn't you say something? Well, old people don't know how to use social media. Well, they're using it right now. They're literally posting about it. The person in the house is telling us right now how this had happened. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, we've got a ton of, it's very, enlightening right now the victim mentality of people. And I have no doubt that we have people that were without power and had hard times and such. But there's a ton of them right now where his awning on his patio collapsed and he wants to know how to get FEMA money. They're looking for assistance and, we'll, you know, is there some assistance that'll put us in a hotel or something? Like and they're very mad when people are like, look, you knew this was coming. Like, you've lived here your entire life. You've been in Tennessee. We have these snowstorms. We had one in 94. We've had this one. We've had a few in between. How do you guys not have some propane, kerosene, you know, salt, something? A generator? Like, why are you guys all panic buying this stuff when you have all lived here your entire lives? And man, it has just turned into a, how dare you shame them? They could have lost, like, and it's not the people involved in it. It's all these other people that are just so inflamed over you going, hey, like, are you going to go get some propane now? Because they've got the 1 pound tanks. They've got pallets of them back at, you know, Walmart. They've got propane back at all of the fill stations. And now you see all these people listing all this shit they bought and they're selling it. So they're just going to get rid of it now and they're not going to have it next year if this happens again.
And I don't get that more than I don't get what goes on down here in Texas. This shit happens here maybe once every 5 years, maybe. And we can go 10 years with nothing like it. How someone in Tennessee doesn't this, am I wrong? Doesn't this happen like every year, some level, some version of it? Like, isn't the memory fairly recent to the last time it snowed and iced and was really fucking cold and shit like that?
It's about every 2 to 3 years since I moved here almost 20 years ago. And
but
the big one,
like, below, like, freezing every year, isn't that a normal?
We do go below freezing every year.
Every year, significantly snow. And don't you get snow every year?
No.
Really?
Really. I don't get snow every year. I don't know about John. If like, sometimes we'll get a dusting that doesn't, it's just in the air, but accumulation, not really. But then when we get it, I think every big snowstorm I've been through here, and there are about 5 memorable ones in 20 years, or 18 years, really. 3 of them had bad ice. So 3 out of 5. One of them had 10 inches of accumulation here. It was wonderful. We had a great time in that one, sledding. But knowing that our propensity to be on that border between snow and rain is where we are geographically, you just know ice is definitely in the picture. And yeah, so Heartland Family Design saying the mayor of Nashville is getting attention by going after NES. So NES is the Nashville Electric Service, and they're getting a lot of crap for not getting power back up fast enough. And I'm looking at the scale of what happened in Nashville just from the outside thinking, well, I don't care how prepared they were. Maybe they could have been, I'm sure they could have been faster than they are, but they went into this in the way that they were designed and with trees maybe not trimmed as much as they needed to be for an ice storm. But also the highest recorded amount of accumulated ice that I've been able to verify was 3/4 of an inch. Do you know what 3/4 of an inch of ice does to a power line with no trees? And then we add trees to that, like the level of destruction. There was a tree on my duplex. That's Saturday morning. My power went out at 5 and my tenant sent me a picture on Sunday and said, I have left to go find shelter, but this is what it looks like. And it was a picture of a tree on the roof.
I think that they're going after NES for the lack of communication. They didn't come out and say anything until, I think, 2 days ago. And everybody's talking about the DEI lady that's in charge of that. I don't know how she's DEI or if it's just because she's a woman or whatever. But if they chose her as the mouthpiece, and maybe she's the top of the pyramid there, but she gave a terrible presentation and didn't say shit about it. Like, nobody knew anything for a long time. That's my understanding. I don't know that he's necessarily putting it on her. As far as like trimming trees, I know that in Franklin, I believe they had this big thing not to trim the trees because of the overstory or something. It doesn't look pretty when they do it, but Benton County here in Camden, we know because Chris Watkins, that's how I know Chris, he brings all the wood chips to us. They have a contract for 5 years. They cut every power line 20 feet in both directions. And nobody likes it when it happens. But we don't have power outages like someplace like Franklin or Nashville proper had, you know, because of that.
Yeah, that's true. So I really dug into this a bit. They did some things wrong, and on a crisis communications scale of how to react versus how to not, you're right. They didn't do a great job. They should have been out there on Saturday saying this is wide scale ice. It's going to be weeks, because you already know that everywhere that I can look at that had that much ice fall wasn't back up. If it's a big metropolitan area, they were not back up quickly, because there are always those incidents where power poles have snapped. Like, that takes some time to get back up.
There's still snap power poles literally suspended by the lines.
Yeah, with power going through them in some cases, causing, you know, like looking like they're going to catch on fire. But also, so the reaction I'm seeing that is always alarming are the people who have just bought into the, we get to be mad at NES and blame them, rather than blaming themselves for not being ready for NES to fail, because basically you have just put your survival in the hands of a utility company if your only way to heat yourself is power. If your only way to cook is power. And, you know, instead of putting your energy into bitching about NES, why not put your energy into figuring out how could I spend maybe $100? Because probably for $100 you could get this done, to have an alternative heat source and to have a different way to cook food.
But then
you really only need to heat one room, right?
But then it's not somebody else's fault, right? Nothing's my fault. Nothing's my problem.
Yeah, I can't believe they failed us. I don't have any heat. And I'm like, but if you want to live, you need heat. You need food,
well, we should
you need water,
stop.
You need heat, you need sanitation.
Well, we should stop feeding you if you don't work.
That would solve a lot of problems right there.
Absolutely. Stop feeding stray dogs. I mean, sure, there's people that need help, but the majority of them are able-bodied.
You know, when you go to like a national park or a state park, there's always those signs that say don't feed the animals because they'll become dependent on you. And they need to learn how to make a living as a wild animal in the wilderness.
Yes.
You too are an animal. I'm just saying.
Yeah, somebody says, our school's been shut down since Monday of last week. It looks like it still will be till next Monday. Yeah, okay. That's probably should be, because we don't need a bunch of people in the ditches needing to be bailed out by emergency services. Like, I have friends in EMS in this area, and I checked in on Sunday with one of them. He's like, it was a really long night. Like, people died on the highway because they shouldn't have been driving in this, and they were. And, you know, I get that hospital workers need to go to the hospital. I also have been at the emergency room in an ice storm, and the poor nurse had been there for 2 days with no break because nobody could get there. So, you know, but if you just are going out because you're bored and feeling like, I don't know, cabin fever, like, take your ass on a walk out there in your snowsuit or not in your snowsuit, get a little cold, have a little suffering, and come back and your not as warm house as you wish it was will feel great.
Recalibrate.
Yeah. Yeah. But I remember, I think it was where would this happen? Starts with an M. I don't know, it was 2015 or something, an entire town went down. Like, their poles snapped Monterey, I think it was. And they ended up evacuating everybody, and people who couldn't get out on their own, EMS came and took them out of their houses because it was going to be 2 to 3 weeks before they could have power again. They're like, you know what, it's going to take forever, just leave. We have shelters here or shelters there. I'd say one of the communication things that was terrible in Nashville is nobody was like, hey, you can go to this place and it's warm. If you can't afford a hotel, there's like, go, usually they're here. There are churches or whatnot who spin up cots or whatever. Not the most fun place to hang out, but better than dying in your bed.
Meanwhile, in Texas, for the audio only people, this is an actual screenshot from a newscast during the ice storm in Texas of somebody that brought their chickens inside, and they're sitting on the fireplace hearth warming their chicken asses. And so you can go too far with this, or maybe they're just self-roasting chickens. I don't know. But I also saw another dude let his pig in. His pig was sleeping on his fucking couch. That was not Texas, to be clear.
None of our outside animals came inside. None of our outside animals used any kind of structure at all. Other than the chickens, we had heavy wood mulch down. We had straw down. We had wood chips, plenty of cover. The chickens, the first day or two, don't want to come out in the snow. Past that, they're out in the snow. The emus slept in the ice, never would go under structure. The dogs, same thing. None of them were ever in structure. It didn't faze them.
You see my picture? Sheep don't give a fuck.
Oh, yeah.
I was in the barn because we wanted them to have access to the barn. They're all looking in there like, why are you in the barn?
Why are you in there?
Because it's not that bad out here, Mom.
It's pretty nice. Yeah. Don't cut my fur off, bro. Wait till spring. Yeah, like, it was cold enough here that while we were gone, Michael and Teresa said the fucking ducks barely came out of the duck house.
Oh, our ducks.
They were like, fuck that shit. And I've seen them sit in the shade when it's 25 degrees out.
Ours sit on frozen pond, literally out on frozen ice.
The day they said that happened, it was like 11 degrees for the high.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, nope, we're not doing it. They said they came out, they got food, and they went right the fuck back in.
My ducks have access to a spring-fed pond, and where the spring comes out, there's like a duck flotilla when it gets really cold because that water's 55 degrees, and they won't go back to their coop. I'm like, it's duck flotilla week.
That's warm relative to the temperature, right?
Yeah.
It's great because in the summer, they're probably all there like, I'm cooling my ass.
Also
they got geothermal figured out, man.
What were you going to say, John?
We got a bunch of, you know, busy bodies that are worried about everybody else's animals. And Tennessee, you have to have a covered structure. There has to be a floor in the structure. There has to be a doghouse. There has to be bedding in the dog. Like, we do all that bullshit anyways. Our dogs never go in that stuff unless we lock them in there. Like, they will never go in there.
My philosophy is give them access and they can choose. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah. I spend $800 every year on straw. And every year I'm like, I'm not doing this again. And we bring it in and all it makes is expensive poop. All they do is poop on it. They don't use it. They only go in there, you know, to roost.
I feel like we could do a couple Johnson Sioux compost piles at John's and they'd do really well. He's already got the material.
He's got lots of material. He's got enough rabbit shit to grow half of Tennessee new corn.
That's true.
Yep.
Diesel heaters have come a long way, burn about a gallon a day, very little electricity, and they make ones that you can vent out of your house or RV. I'm looking at adding a diesel heater after all of this passes as my backup to my backup.
Yep. $100, $150, $250 is expensive, $650 is about the most expensive. There's some coming out of Europe that are a couple grand. Even your $150 has a Bluetooth app. It's got all kinds of shit. You can gravity feed them off of a bigger tank. There's a ton of video out there on those things.
And if you don't have access to diesel, you can make something that's compatible.
You can put kerosene in them. You can use fry oil in them. You can use old motor oil will go in them.
I was going to say, if you live where you can get kerosene, just an old school freaking kerosene heater. And I don't want to hear anybody about dying or whatever. Crack a fucking window and don't be retarded. But I mean,
we use kerosene
here.
We
used those things in Pennsylvania for 50 years and no one ever died. Yep. I mean, if you duct tape your windows up and shit and turn it on high until the black soot comes out of it, that's not an accident. That's Darwinism.
Yeah, or fall asleep without your windows cracked. I heated with kerosene here before we put in this wood stove. That was our original heat because there was no heat here. Speaking of which, I need to log on it. The other thing is when an ice storm comes, I don't notice the electricity going out so much because the solar system runs the water and the wood stove heats the house all the time anyway. So it's not any extra work for me. But I understand people who don't want to heat with wood.
Yeah. But when we lived in Pennsylvania for 3 years, when I moved the whole family up there, we had those expensive ass electric space heaters on the wall.
Yeah.
And they're just too expensive. I got two kerosene heaters. We ran them all winter, Pennsylvania winter, for 3 years, and nothing bad happened. You just have to have enough intelligence to know how to use the technology that you're using. And I'm going to say that, like, where I grew up, I don't think the average IQ is that high, yet those people managed to not kill themselves. So I don't think this is like a really difficult skill set to develop. How to use a kerosene heater without killing yourself. That's pretty basic.
Well, and if you live in a building that's been recently built and it's ultra insulated and super sealed, you literally probably should open a window.
Yeah, you could.
Like, the older houses are drafty enough, you're getting the ventilation.
Yeah.
But if yours isn't, you need to know that, and it seems counterintuitive to crack a window when you're heating a room, but Yeah, you need air exchange. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, and you've got a wood stove. So people need to know with a fireplace, if you've got just a regular old fireplace, it will warm up the room it's in, and your adjacent rooms, it will literally cool them down because it pulls the heat in. And if you have a fireplace, I would totally recommend spending about $1,100 to $2,500 and getting one of the better quality inserts, because they do not heat to the level that a wood stove does, but they're about 10 times better than just a fireplace. We got one in PA, or not PA, Arkansas, and it was great. And they also make these little things that are basically like whatever you call the stand that you put the wood in, the wood stand or whatever, but they're hollow, and they have a little tiny fan on them about the size of like a computer fan, and it blows air through the hollow structure of that, and then it comes back out. And so you're getting an air exchange with the heat, and it doesn't affect the fire at all because the little thing that comes out sticks out of your fireplace. And those apparently work. I've never tried one, but they work really well, apparently.
I'll tell you what I was very skeptical of working. I'll show you.
I know what it is.
Yeah, it's this thing.
Yep, those work.
It's powered by heat, and it just blows the heat straight off the top. Yep.
I first found one of those with Ben Falk like 15 years ago when I was up at his place in Vermont. And I was like, if a dude that lives here says it works, it probably works.
Yeah, it's great. I used to have a fan plugged in to blow the air out. And now I just use that. It's quieter and moves the air, and I'm happy. And then if it's not, I can look from across the room. And when it's not going, I can go like, oh, yeah, probably time to do something about that fire.
I think our things actually use electricity, but the electricity is generated by the heat. It's not heat convection. It's actually a little, like, power generation thing in there that does all that.
I really should look into how that works, because you are right. It's not just – it's like the way it's designed with its – I think it when it heats, there's airflow that makes it generate the power, which then makes the fan work.
I always thought they just worked like the heat rises and it convects and then it makes the thing go, but – I was reading something recently, and it says there's basically some sort of electronics in there, and the heat is converted to just enough energy to spin the blade, which is not a lot of energy. There we go. It's
buddy
a
heater.
Thermocouple. Yeah, I was going to say capacitor, and I knew that was wrong. I was just going to make up an electric word. That's what it is, a thermocouple.
Yeah.
Buddy Heater has put out a fan. I believe Buddy Heater put it out to go on top of the Buddy Heater that does that. For a long time, you'd get the Big Buddy, and it would take D batteries or had a power jack to it, and it had a fan built in. And they had a piezo, right? So they just start on the clicker.
Yeah.
I have a new one I just opened up, and I was surprised that it wouldn't click. And in reading and going through it, it requires two AAA batteries, and it has a sparker and no longer has – the fan in it. They took the fan out for a long time. They didn't have the fan, and now the new ones have the fan back in, but they don't have the piezo. So if you're buying one of those, be aware of that, if that matters to you.
I used to work with a company, but they stopped making them. It went out of business. I remember what they were called, but it was like a little rocket stove with a little fan in it, and you just threw scraps of wood in it to like boil shit. But the fan actually ran from the heat.
Mm-hmm.
But it also had a USB port on it, and while you were cooking your shit, you could charge your cell phone.
Yeah, REI sells those.
And they probably went to China and got them made for a third of the price or something, and that's probably what, because this company, it was fairly expensive for what it was. They were like $150, and that's a lot of money for something that I have a lot of things for free that can replace it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that happened is the boil water things here. So if you weren't already filtering your water through something like a Berkey, and you were drinking tap water, the plants filled and they said just boil your water. It's like all of the classic prepper things happened.
What is that? Because pipes broke and they were afraid of infiltration. Is that what it was?
Well, when the pipes break, they actually take a thing of pool shock and put in there at the break when they close it back up, and then they treat back at the plant also.
So it takes a certain amount of time to get through.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Brandon, 3H Survival, our buddy sent me some video running his water, and there's just mud coming through it.
Oh, wow.
From broken pipes. Yep. Wow. From broken pipes.
Yeah. So I was really lucky because at my duplex, one side is empty, and the other side has a tenant, and that is on purpose right now. And I went into the storm with the faucet dripping and the heat on at 60 degrees on that empty unit, figuring we'll get through it. Water is moving. It's going to get down to zero. So whatever. So then the power goes out. And I'm picturing this beautiful kitchen sink Ike sculpture that's going to build as they, you know, as the water keeps going, but then it's freezing in the house. And my buddy got out there on Monday. He was able to get out there and turn the water off at the street for both sides.
There was a lot of people in Nashville, apparently, that went to hotels and went to other, you know, further out other counties. And when they came back, their pipes had broke, ran, and then froze. So just like you saw in Texas in the freeze a couple of years ago, people coming in and they've just got, they can't open the door because there's a sheet of ice inside the door.
Yeah. So we had no broken pipes at all. And I'm sure it was because we turned it off at the street, which you can do. You can do even if you don't have the special tool, as long as you can reach your arm down there with a wrench. You just have to know about it.
Yeah,
right?
You can also buy the tool very inexpensively. You can also make the tool out of a piece of PVC pipe.
Yeah, it's like $20 at Harbor Freight or something.
Well worth having. Also worth having is a slurp pump or one of the pumps from Milwaukee or DeWalt or something, because those boxes a lot of time have cold ass water inside them when you get in there. So to pump that out, those pumps work super well.
Yep.
I just am on a well, so I don't care.
Yeah.
Nancy.
You care when you have to spend $20,000 to redo the pipe or whatever.
I don't want to talk about that. I didn't have to redo the pipe. I did have to put a new pump in about 5 years ago, and it was almost $4,000.
Yeah, you were like, well, there went that MSB sale.
What really was sad is the dude was like, we pulled it out, we got the numbers and shit off, and he figured out, he goes, man, this pump of yours is 29 years old. I'm like, well, that ain't so bad. He goes, don't expect that to happen.
you hear those stories about, I needed a new starter or alternator, so I, you know, bought one and that didn't work. We had to go through three to get one. The third one finally was good, right? Because they're rewinding them and they're just such poor quality. That's probably the same thing with those pump motors. You better have a second one sitting there. Same with the pumps, the little pumps we use for our aquaponics system. Anytime we buy one, we buy two.
All right, same. I've got two standard pumps, a small and a large on my property.
Yep.
And I've got two big ones and two little ones on the shelf at all times.
Yep.
Everything's on either a dry fit or a quick disconnect. It takes me longer to go get the pump than to swap it out.
Yeah, and anytime we change out a faucet anywhere or do any repairs on pipe, we put a cutoff there too.
Yeah. When I lived in Arkansas, we had some sort of module on our well that you like pulled out. It's very similar to what I have now, but it was a certain model. And we would go up there and the well wouldn't work, and we'd pull that out and it would stink to burnt. And what it was is we were so high up, lightning would strike near it and it would short it out. So we got on the well guy and I'm like, well, this takes 5 seconds to swap. He goes, yeah, but they don't really make this model anymore. And he's like, I only have five of these in stock. I bought them all. And we had like two more burn out before we sold that place. And I told the real estate agent we sold, like, tell this guy where these are. And when these are, this is after the check cleared, right? When these are gone, there are no more. He needs to go out and start scrap hunting. So like, that's just a thing. Like if you're on a well and it's older, you need to see if any of the parts on it are out of date and either update them or get the spares that you need before they're unavailable.
Yes.
Yeah. Josh says whenever there's a boil advisory given, bacteria has already been detected. Yeah. A lot of times without the freeze, right? If you get a boil advisory, that's because people have shown up in the emergency room sick already.
Yep. Yep. Get a Berkey or something.
So my oven went out.
Drink.
My oven went out, and I'm finally doing the thing I should have done a long time ago and getting a commercial grade range in my kitchen. And I've spent years looking at what I'm going to get when this finally happens. And I found an older model that's made for being in a consumer kitchen, but it's commercial grade, which means the pilot lights aren't on all the time, right? As a result of this, I have now ordered a bunch of parts that it does not need because I want to make sure I have parts. Like, would you do that?
What did you go with?
It's a Fisher Paykel, and it's got five burners instead of six, and then it is a gas oven too. And it does not have a computer running anything on it. It's all analog, which was what I wanted because we can maintain that. And what I've discovered is it's hard to get some of the parts for it, so you just get the parts. And they're like $20 each. So you spend another couple hundred bucks on parts. And then what's going to go wrong? The thermocouple and the igniters most of the time. That's what's going to go wrong.
That one in our kitchen here was $600.
Yeah.
Stainless steel. It was a little ugly. Somebody tried to buff it or something, but it melts pans. It literally will melt a normal. You go to Walmart, buy any pan there, it'll melt it. It's insane how great that thing is.
Yeah, I love it. I love your stove. That's what made me commit to it, was getting to know you in like 2020 or whenever we started. I was like, he's right. I just got to get a commercial stove, because I've come to this on all appliances. They're going to break. They build them to break. They're going to break within 5 years, maybe less. But if you buy the commercial fridge or the commercial dishwasher, it may break, but it's built to be repairable. And that's, you know, I don't know. Okay. I thought Dark Horse had a good question, Jack. What do you think? Right. You want to go around that one? So what are small, affordable steps to take for inclement weather in an apartment? And inclement weather to me means tornadoes or ice or wildfires or all of the things, flooding, right?
Let's start with ice, since that's mostly on our minds. So what are the problems we're talking about here? The biggest problems are you can't leave, so you need food and shit to do, right? You're cold, so you need heat. And your pipe's freeze, so you need water. So I'm thinking a portable generator on your patio, whether the apartment people say you can have it or not, because F them, some sort of backup heat, and do what I've always said and get your friends who drink garbage, or save it if you drink it yourself, like Arizona iced tea and soda bottles, and fill up a bunch of bottles of water and stick them in a closet. And make sure you have extra food, not just milk and eggs, one day before the event happens. And I'm just thinking, as simple as that sounds, all the two sentences of it would solve 90% of the problems that 90% of the people have right now or did have last week. Am I wrong?
I don't think so. I think the other thing is to be prepared for a composting bucket system for your waste.
That's valid.
Because your power is going to, your water is going to go out and you can't flush. And that's something that stores real easy. It's like sawdust and a bucket and a toilet lid and some of those super awesome bags. The reason you want the sawdust is it keeps the smell down. It's not so much like, because you could just poop in the bag, but then you smell it and it will linger. So
you can go to Petco or PetSmart or whatever and buy something called Feline Pine.
Yeah, that stuff's
good. It's basically pelletized pine sawdust, and it works really good. It actually, it burns in a pellet burning biochar maker thing too. It's too expensive to do that with, but it does. I only give you that because some people won't do what I'm about to say. Go buy softwood fuel pellets for this purpose at Tractor Supply. They are $5 for 40 pounds. $5 for 40 pounds. And it works. It works.
We use pine wood shavings. We get the bales of them at Tractor Supply. They're like $5-6.
And you can get them, you know, but everybody with a Home Depot or a Lowe's can get softwood fuel pellets for $5.
Like our outhouses here, they have normal toilet seats on them. So they're somewhat comfortable. But it's just a 5-gallon bucket with wood shavings. Yeah. Same thing Nicole has at her place for her outhouse. And it's just the comfort of it, right? If you have that little toilet topper thing for your 5-gallon bucket, but if you're in a house or apartment, you don't even have to do that. Turn the water off, flush it, and just put a bag in your toilet. And then just tie that sucker off.
You can do that. I'm just thinking the pellets for people, like he says, in apartments. For storage, like the amount of pine shavings that's in one 40-pound bag, it's like 5 bales because it's so compressed. And it expands as you use it. And then you can throw it at your neighbors. hey, what's the problem? It's all organic.
Yeah. Art by Lee says those compressed coconut core bricks work great too. Yeah, those.
They would. They're just expensive.
Yeah. And so the other thing is, think about just some things you can do without spending money if you're out of power to make your life easier. If you already have a cooler, you can take stuff from your fridge and put it in your cooler for the day and leave your fridge closed all day and it will just stay cold longer, or a freezer. You can put blankets around that. You can hang blankets over your windows to keep more of the heat in if you don't have power. There's a lot of things you can just do with what you have if you have to.
We had people here complaining that the food in their refrigerator was spoiling. yet we had snow and ice outside. Like, they never took the stuff and put it outside in the snow or in the cold, where for a long amount of time we weren't above, you know, 40 degrees. Well, we're still not above 40 degrees.
Practice and with apoplectic.
And they just they're literally pissed.
Double facepalm, man. Double facepalm is only have two hands.
And then you had other people complaining that their power was off, and come to find out it was an issue on their property. The line power was back on. They had something going on at their house.
Yeah, I had that same, like, so it really helps to have a community, because me driving an hour and a half to Nashville through the ice was not going to happen. I was able to have the water turned off at the street and somebody look at the power, like how the tree had hit the power, to see if it was my problem or their problem. So that when it finally went back on, I didn't have then discover, oh, much to my surprise, I have to get an electrician out. Because I figured if I needed an electrician, I wanted to start doing that Monday, not Friday, when the power came on. But all of the problems were on the power side, not my side, thankfully. So, yeah. I feel like we got really lucky through that storm, because we got maybe an eighth of an inch of ice on Saturday, and then it was above freezing. It rained all day Sunday.
Yeah.
So the trees didn't have accumulation, but then the road wasn't draining as much as we tried to use the car to make channels so it would pour off into the creek. And so we ended up with a beautiful ice skating rink on our road for days that was, you know, inches thick, which was.
Yeah, and that road is already so wonderful. I mean, that's just like.
I mean, it's a lot more smoothed out when it's an ice skating rink, though. So yeah. It's a lot less bumpy. But you go faster down it with your brakes on.
I bet you would. One of the problems we have here, and it's part of what happened to my mailbox, is we have all these rednecks around here that think four-wheel drive, four-wheel cornering, and four-wheel stop. I'm here to assure you it does not. Just because you can go doesn't mean that you should, and just because you can go doesn't mean that you can control or stop. That's kind of what I liked about my place in Arkansas, though. We had this gravel, big, wide-ass road that the guy graded every year with the dozer. We just throw him $500 a piece. He took care of the road all year for us. And because of that, we had big chunks of rock and all. It had to be a lot before you didn't get traction on that. The problem was when you got to where it was paved.
Yeah. And, I mean, you can put sand, you can put rock, you can put kitty litter, you can put all kinds of stuff. Like, you just have to have it, you know, a material bin.
Yeah. Salt is something everybody should have. Here's some preps that you should probably have. Some salt for your own safety and the safety of your dogs, especially if you have inside dogs, because when they go out on the porch, that's usually where you end up with ice more than on the thing. And then I have them on my site somewhere. I'm not going to look them up right now. There's generic brands. You can get any brand you want. They're all the same. The things that slip over your shoes that have the ice cleats on, those have saved my ass. And the older I get, the more important I realize that is. And the thing is, we almost never get snow here. We almost always get ice. And if we get snow, it turns into ice anyway. So, like, I would not be without those if I live somewhere you get ice and snow. And if you have older parents, but they're, like, older like us older, not like, you know, not coming out of the house older, where they're still out doing shit, buy them for them, because they will not fucking listen to you. But if you put them there, they might use them, and it'll save a hip or an arm or a wrist or God knows what. Because I cracked the shit out of my skull about 20 years ago, and I ain't ever doing that again.
I only busted my ass once, and I was in my best snow boots when it happened, and that's when I became aware that it's time for me to get some of those.
Yeah, snow boots don't work on ice.
Yeah. They work better than other shoes, but they
work better than other shoes. But those
snow shoes would have been great, like the just.
Oh yeah, but those they make these. Those things work so good
for guys. Like, yeah, guys are saying crampons. Those are the real ones, but they make like these rubbery things that stretch out, will go over your heel and your toe on boots, or it'll fit anything. Mm-hmm. And they got like these little springy things, and they got some spikes in them. REI sold them forever. You used to be able to get them at Costco. I haven't seen them in a long time. A lady showed up here to work wearing them the other day.
Right there. Let me get it up on the screen.
Yeah. So Tom's saying space heaters need space around them. Two fires this year alone. Okay. the last way I'm going to try to heat myself in a power outage, the absolute last way, is a space heater. Like, something has gone so wrong for me because it's the least efficient. I will do an electric blanket before I will do a space heater. Because, anyway, talk to me about these wonderful things I should already own.
Stabilizers? They're, what, $28 a pair? You won't need them till you need them, and when you do, they'll just work. And if you find a cheaper brand or whatever, fine. But I bought some cheaper ones, and the little metal thingies, like the first time I used them, started falling out. And I've had these for like 5 years, and I probably use them twice a year. And I think they're worth $28 to not go. What's an ER visit for a fractured fucking wrist or an elbow, you know, compared to $28? So to me, that's – and I really mean it. If you have older parents that try to do shit still – get these for them, and like, if you know it's gonna storm, like, go to their house and put them right at the fucking front door.
You guys can
don't say anything, just put them there and say, hey dad, remember when you bought these? I guess you were really smart, dad, when you bought these. I didn't think these made any sense when you bought these, dad, but I think you were right. I'm gonna go home and buy a pair because you're so smart, dad.
You guys can get studs, too, that'll screw into your tires for this, and then you can just take them out. They use a quarter-inch fitting, and you can just put them in the lugs on your mud terrains or all terrains or whatever.
I wish I would have known that one, because the one problem with my Subaru, which is for sale right now, by the way, if anybody needs a Subaru, has four-wheel drive, but it came with brand-new tires. And my tire guy's like, no, don't replace those tires, Nicole, but they were not the tires I wanted for this particular storm. But studs would have fixed that. Luckily, Tactical has a 1994 four-wheel drive Jeep that had just gotten brand new Toyos on it. So
we were out every day with just all terrains. Toyo, I think we put Nittos or Toyos on it this time.
Yeah, Toyos are great. But
four high, four high, all terrains. We went everywhere we needed to go every single day. We had restaurants open in town. There was one restaurant open, and we just ate there every day. And there's every time we went out, you saw tons of families out with little tiny kids in snow gear tobogganing. They were up, you know, sledding on the hills and stuff.
Oh, bring that up, though. If you live in a place where it doesn't snow and you decide you want to go on a sleigh ride, you should know some things that people that go on sleigh rides know, that people that don't go on sleigh rides don't know. And that is, a lot of things people improvise in the sleds are dangerous. Shit goes a lot faster on ice than it does in snow.
Broken
and
wrist.
Hitting a pole or a tree at high speed can fucking and does kill people.
And you're not stopping before that bottom of the hill road if there's a bottom of the hill road.
No, we had somebody die here over on the Dallas side. I don't remember exactly where, but they were sleigh riding, I think, on like the side of like a highway. And it's not what you think. I think they hit one of the pillars from like an overpass or something and died. The other thing is stay the fuck away from ponds. This is really sad, and I don't blame anybody in this because it was kids. But some lady lost 3 sons. Somewhere, again, over east side, Dallas side of things. They were outside. They weren't at home. They were at somebody else's house or something. They had a stock pond. And the one kid fell through the ice in the pond. And I don't think they were walking on the ice. The way they build these stock ponds a lot of times are very steep banks. And once you start going, you can't stop. And I think the brothers tried to save them. They were like 5, 6, and 8 or something like that, something in that range. And the mother almost died trying to save them. 2 other people managed to pull her out. And I think the only thing that's probably going to keep her alive is she also has 2 daughters. So she had like 5 kids. So she's got something. I mean, losing a child is heart destroying. 3 in one go. My heart hurts for this person, but there are things that are dangerous when we have this kind of weather that typically are not that dangerous because, you know, you fall into a pond and it's 2 feet deep, you stand up.
Yeah.
Well, when you're a child and it's freezing and you can't get out.
Yeah.
A
rope was needed in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think they were in a place to have one. You know, by the time they did manage to get the kids out, by the time they did, it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothermia is quick, especially, you know, sometimes kids, it works for them where if you get immediate medical attention, they can resuscitate them, but they weren't able to with any of them. And it's fuck.
Please. Yeah. So I had, when I moved here, I had one of those old school sleds with the blades that I used to use in Oregon all the time. And the hills here are steeper. And the first thing I did was go down a pasture hill and roll. And every one of us who did it rolled, and we all got shoulder injuries. And then we moved to garbage can lids or the more soft, slower sleds, because those blade ones on ice, whew. So we were lucky.
Yeah, those, they're sleighs for snow. I'm just saying, right? Like, and every kid that's ever sleigh ridden, like up where, you know how to do it and all, knows that you get to the bottom of the hill sometimes where the snow has iced over, and what that's like. And
yeah,
that's,
accelerate.
You have to think, you know, you can't control yourself in those situations. They don't have a steering wheel and a brake. And I'll just say that for everybody, but especially for people that, you know, you didn't grow up with it, so you don't understand the risks you're taking. There was, my son used to do this shit when he worked at On the Border. His friends and him from On the Border would steal the serving trays and go out and sleigh ride on them, right? And that's all fine. Just know what's at the bottom and what's in the way.
Yeah, those things are going to go fast.
I was always waiting for one to, like, when they brought it over, just, you know, like a hairline crack in the whole
thing. Just crack. Yeah.
Apart, but that never happened, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, you always read in old school books about people dying from sled injuries or sleighing from doing that, and it's those things. It's like you hit your head too hard or whatever. So the other thing is, if you're gonna sled down a hill and you don't know, go less far up the hill than you think will be fun, and go down a little bit to test how fast it is, and then figure out where the ideal thing. Because we had this great hill growing up. It was about 2 miles long. And we would fly down that thing. We had kids posted at the intersection stopping traffic.
Okay.
It was a whole, you know, there were 25 of us doing this. And that worked great, but it was also not as steep as what we have here.
We had about a mile of hill with sidewalk. Back in the early 80s, late 70s, we had the whole coordination set up with that, but we didn't do that with Florida. So we didn't do that with sleds. We had those old school, like fiberglass, the narrow, long ass skateboards, and we would sit on those fucking things like it was a luge. And you can fuck yourself up on one of those too. I'm just going
to. Yeah. I think I grew up with skis on my feet, and just, I haven't been skiing for, 17 years or something, went this year. And I became aware of how in shape your core needs to be to ski well. Because I had, so part of the thing about sledding and skiing and all of these outdoor sports is also your basic level of fitness will impact if you get hurt or not, because if you don't have the capacity to use your muscles to adjust things, you're going to hit the tree. Somebody earlier said you need to do exercises, getting stronger arms and legs, your core too, like all of it. That's not bad advice for anybody.
Yeah. I've not heard anybody talk about snow chains and cables. As a kid in California, in San Diego, when you'd want to go up to the mountains during the snow, or if you're going to any of the ski resorts, once you got there, Highway Patrol was requiring you had chains, and you could go to any of the tire stores and rent chains. They would put them on for you, or you could just have them and put them on at the base and jack them up and put these on. But I've not heard of those in 40 years, probably. I've not heard of snow chains or tire, cables. But Jose mentioned something that sounds, you know, similar to that. I'll bet they're still out there and available. And all the crazy shit we carry in all of our trucks. I mean, I could imagine having a pair of these things.
I know with the Subaru, they designed the tires to not have enough clearance to put chains on. Which then that's what Jose's talking about, right?
Yeah, I never heard of these.
I'm going to buy some of those.
I guess you have to jack the car up and slide them over it, because like chains, you can kind of like lay them out and drive into them.
Yeah.
These look like you have to literally slip them over, but.
Maybe.
I wonder how long.
Or do they have Velcro?
Before I buy these, I'm going to have to do some serious research. Because
yeah, some. Audacious is saying socks are made for super short distances, slow speed, not recommended for road use.
But this may be like out of the driveway or when you're, well, no, because you got to jack the car up. So I don't really know.
Do you have to jack the car up or do they have a way?
How would you get it? I guess you could kind of like have, but then.
I'm looking at that strap line. Like I'm wondering if there's a way it attaches. So what we have, Jack, is 2 miles of ice sheets. Well, we don't need more.
Yeah.
From here to, once you get to the highway, since day two, the highway's been clear. So I could see something like that getting us more safely down the hauler road, even though, you know, none of us went off the road. But
if you can get them on and off relatively easily, because that's what we deal with. Like all of our main roads will be completely plowed off and then just traffic melts everything. And then as soon as you get on a side road, it's not good.
Yeah.
So I would need it for like a mile. Coming down.
Apparently John needs it in his parking lot, except for his parking lot's flat. So that's,
you got
that's
gravel,
something.
Bro.
Yeah, we don't need it.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said it was icy.
No, we just like we just put it in four high and
yeah.
No problem.
Socks slip on top and drive forward half turn. Okay.
I'm sure there's a YouTube video.
So put them on before you're stuck is what you're saying.
I would. I mean, I make sure my car is pointed down the hill and I'm not backing out my driveway before a snowstorm, too, for that. Because who wants to slide down their driveway?
I can just see you sliding down across the street and right in a ditch on the other side.
I mean, there's a mailbox in my way.
No. You're a fucking anchor in a ball hitch.
Yeah. Just,
last resort, you know.
What we need here is a rope tow on our pasture to go up. Every time there's an ice storm, I'm like, I guess the sheep are coming down to the lower pasture because I don't know if we're getting up the pasture without just walking.
Oh, yeah. You got animals, too. That's a whole new level of shit to deal with when you got animals out there.
I think the best ice video I saw was some guy whose sheep got stuck at the top of the pasture and then it iced. And they decided to come down and they were literally sliding on their butts and hitting the fence. Luckily, none of the sheep died in the... Yeah, and he was like, no, guys, stay up there. It's like you're talking to your sheep. Now they're going to totally come down the hill to you.
Yeah. Well, they got built-in padding, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, then they see one do it, and they're like, okay.
Okay, yeah.
Wilma didn't die. I'm going to come down.
Any of them that jump the fence, Greg Duty shoots with a .30-06, because once they see one do it.
Yeah.
And once they see one jump, I guess when they see one jump and he gets shot, they're like, fuck, I ain't doing that. I ain't doing that. You know there's like... A whole group of them going, dude, he won't shoot you. He won't.
Our flock's so small, they go to a retraining camp when they start jumping the fence, which involves cattle panels and high voltage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Retraining camp.
It is. It's retraining camp for the fence. Fence retraining camp is a thing here. It only happens when... exterior things have made it so our fence charger isn't being a fence charger and we didn't notice. And then somebody eventually figured it out.
Yeah.
Sheep are much more controllable than pigs, but they will eventually test the fence. And if they're super hungry, they will test the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you supplement feeding any?
We're giving them hay right now. And then we always give them a little bit of, Timothy hay pellets from the store because that makes them come every night when we call. And then when we need to catch one, they come every day when we call. So that's what we're giving them. Yep. We had a good amount of field hay, but right now we just have field ice still. So, yeah. How about you?
Yeah, we brought in some actual, hay.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have that all going into something like this, too, that you're just like, oh, yeah, I guess we get to use the hay we put up this fall.
Yep.
So, which is why, not having to worry about things like this is nice, but, you know, people who did have to worry about it should make notes because then next time they can be more.
We've lived in Tennessee for... over 20 years now. Every single year I've bought a kerosene heater and a couple of buddy heaters. I have 30 of them. I bet I could show you 30 buddy heaters brand new in the packaging. We just buy them. And then anytime a new employee comes in or whatever, we always ask everybody, hey, are you good? Do you have, you know, an alternative source of heat or whatever? And we sent a 5-gallon thing of kerosene home with one lady, and we sent a flat of propane tanks home with another lady. There was only two people that needed anything. And usually it's my asshole friends that, you know, are here, and you give them the thing. And we had a guy that was cutting video for us, and I gave him a heater, a kerosene heater. And I said, hey, this kind of, it'll smell in your car. Stop on the way and fill. I gave him a brand new can. I said, stop and fill this up. A month later, I'm talking to his wife, and she busted out that he never went and got the kerosene. They had the kerosene heater and had the kerosene container and no kerosene for it. But we buy that every year.
Yeah, and you buy kerosene. I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Every year we add to it.
Yeah.
Every year.
You buy kerosene when you can in the summer, because a week before a snowstorm, when they're talking about a snowstorm, they run out of kerosene at the gas station.
We bought two Big Buddy heaters this last year for $69. Those are $170. We bought them on clearance at Tractor Supply. They do it every year. They clearance that stuff out. Same with Lowe's.
Yeah. Okay, Jack, what's your favorite SOE product?
Right now, today.
Well, then that relates to this question. What's your favorite Hollow Roast product?
What's in here? I like very dark roasted anything Nicole makes, but
yeah,
you brought some, I think it was Guatemalan or something, and the beans were small compared to your normal beans. They were like 2/3 the size, and that was really good, whatever that was.
Well, it might have been the Tanzanian pea berry.
No, it wasn't Tanzanian. It was like something Central South American-y. And they were small. Maybe it was. I don't know. It was a while.
Those are small. They are pea berries, so they're a smaller. They're a smaller bean. So.
That would be it. That was really freaking good.
I have more of that. I'll send you some.
I like John's bags a lot, but I really like his rigger belts. The rigger belts are awesome. I mean, that's. I had to make me a new one when I lost a bunch of weight because the old one wouldn't fit no more. Even though it's adjustable, the tag went around my ass, so. It needed to be replaced. I asked him to shorten the one I had, and he refused to do it and sent me.
You won't do it.
But the rigger belts are, you talk about something that's overbuilt. I remember a video from him, like when I first met him, so like almost 20 years ago now, where they took one of his rigger belts and they put it between two giant ass 4-wheel drive trucks and tried to pull it apart. And the trucks went into basically a stalemate tug of war and could not break the belt. When he says he overbuilds shit, he's not fucking kidding.
We since did that in Nashville, there's a National Guard unit there that's a repair unit, and they have a massive crane. And we actually hooked two of those together with a crane to an M60 main battle tank.
And
they
lifted
the tank all the way up, almost vertical. The gun was straight up in the air with two of the riggers belts.
And I don't know, did you use the buckles on that? Because when you did the truck, that was with the fucking buckle. It's one thing that
we did it with the buckles.
Grabbing holds, but the fucking buckle.
Oh, that buckle's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, we did it. So those are steel buckles on the riggers belt, not the Cobra. Yeah. The Cobra belt's aluminum. The riggers belt, that H315, those are the actual hardware in a parachute pack tray. And those are the actual hardware on an A7A strap, which is what they use to secure loads in cargo planes, like in C-130s and stuff. That's what a rigger belt originally was. They would just take an A7A strap and cut it down and use it as a belt.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, that's a job I would have never wanted in the military.
A rigger like that, an airplane rigger?
Well, the guy that packs the chute?
Oh, yeah, parachute rigger.
I mean, there's a lot of fail-safes and all, but like, to know every day that those guys go out and do training jumps, that their life is in your hands. Now, what they do is every once in a while, they pull one of your chutes and you jump it, right? But that would be what worries me. Like, you do 1,000 of them a month or something. Like, the odds that you might have screwed one up, man, that's a lot to live with.
So somebody's asking how long kerosene stores. Kerosene does not go bad.
Yeah.
If you have a poor container, you could have your container fail, or you could have, if you had a breach, it could be a problem. We store 5 gallons. I keep in Euro cans, NATO jerry cans, and then larger bulk than that. I keep them. They look like 55-gallon drums, but they're 13-gallon syrup containers. They had like Dr. Pepper in them. We just put it in there, fill them up, because those, that's still manageable. I can bear hug 13 gallons if I need to. 55 gallons is more difficult to move around, especially on gravel, ice, snow. But the 5 gallon cheap cans you get from Walmart or whatever, plan on those failing after a year or two, especially if they're out in the elements. But kerosene, it doesn't ever go bad. Kerosene, you can use it 20 years from now if you store it properly.
Yeah, we use the racing fuel can.
Yep. Yeah, you'll lose some volatility out of that, but it doesn't have the lightweight volatiles like gasoline does. That it's gasoline doesn't necessarily go bad. It loses its combustibles. So if you see shimmer or you smell gasoline, you're leaking it. If you have it in a good metal can that cams down, you won't smell it. I carried 60 gallons of fuel inside a vehicle all the time, sideways, never smelled any of that stuff. Now, if you smell it, I also carried it around in those VP racing jugs. Just rotate that shit out, right? Don't have it in there more than 6 months or so. Like, you would open my truck door and see shimmer coming out of my, in San Diego. And I don't know if I'm just lucky we never had it catch fire, never blew up.
Yeah, that's
But you did smell a hint of it.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
He's right, though. Like, if you have good old school jerry cans or whatever, nothing comes out of there. Like, so, can you, he's dead on. Can you smell it or not? I mean,
yeah.
You want wavy and fuel cans is what you're looking for. There's NATO cans. There's 120 so different versions. They all look the same. It's the nozzle that guys get stuck on. You're not going to use the nozzle. Use a siphon, use a pump, use something else. But you want that can because that sucker, when it's cold, will suck in and cause a vacuum. And when it's hot, it will it'll bow out. And you want to be careful, too, when it's bowed out. It'll shoot fuel vapor 10 feet away, right? So you want to have a sacrificial towel to put over it when you do cam that. You also want to have a pair of gloves and a large screwdriver to pry that open when it's cold, because it'll be under vacuum and it'll be very difficult to open.
Yep. Had some cheap jerry cans from Amazon start to leak.
Yep, that's why. You want to buy the weight. What you're looking for is Wavian. You will see ones that look just like it. The Beaver ones look they look just like it, right? The way you can tell is the seam where the two sides are welded together. On the real ones, that's recessed. On the fake ones, the Beaver and the Chinese ones, you sit on that seam, and when it moves and vibrates around, you'll get a leak there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like one of those old school seams that you learn to make with sheet metal in like high school metal shop when they used to have it, where you just had a fold over and a fold over and a crimp.
I have fuel we moved from California with that we put in California in 2005, and we moved here and we put it in trucks and ran it maybe 10 years ago.
The cold left us. Now we have to figure out what to do. We're not very good at this, John.
Sure we are. Just read some of the comments here. I do not have a wood stove. I have 50 cords. I bet I have 50 cords, maybe a little less than 50 cords of wood. I have a lot of wood. We process wood. I will show you right now the stove that I think we're going to add. And it looks like this right here. It's a dual barrel stove, not made out of 55 gallon drums, but actual.
I'm trying to put him on. There you go.
Looks like this. And this guy makes these. There's tons of guys that make them.
Uh-huh.
But these pipes pass through, and it has a fan on the back. So you can run it, you know, with the fan, which will blow air. And I have my shop set where I can put that in the garage, in the middle of the garage, and open double doors and use an extra fan to push that into the downstairs as well as the upstairs. I have two big glass double doors. So we could heat the entire upstairs and downstairs with that thing and just keep feeding it with wood. And it'll take wood up to about 3.5 feet.
That's nice.
Absolutely it is. That way we can just everything with a skid steer. It's just a force multiplier. When you have equipment where you can move weight like that, same, like that's where we store all of our firewood now is in IBC totes. In the cages.
Yep. I love that idea. That's why we're moving. Use a skid steer here.
Man, for you do. You really do. For moving anything, construction supplies, anything. You can dress your own driveway. You can do your gravel. You can do everything with it.
Somebody says, Tarasu from Costa Rica. Do you have that? I have a Costa Rican bean. I don't remember, because I have a lot of beans, which specific region it is from. But it is delicious. I'm very careful about the beans I choose.
Yeah, Pride D for your diesel fuel, Pride G for your gas. If you're not familiar with that product, think Seafoam and Stabil and all that. But this is the product that the military uses. There's a lot of papers out there on it. Pride D, Pride G, they react on my social media. You can buy a gallon of it, which I think treats 5,000 gallons. And you can get it from Camping World, Amazon. But it's like Seafoam and Stabil, but on steroids. Like, that's the real product. And if you keep your fuel in proper cans where it can't vent, like the fuel we used, we didn't treat. It was non-treated fuel. But Pride G and Pride D will reconstitute fuel that won't run also.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, check it. Dude, it's incredible. Like, check out their stuff.
Okay.
And if you have a generator, use it when you don't need it. To make sure it's still
Well, you need it. Yeah, you really, like, if you have a contract with a generator company, and I don't know how much you actually need to do this, or if it's just them selling a part of the service, but like Generac, they test fire your stuff once a month. They come out, I think, every quarter and do an oil change, which sounds insane. Jeff Scully, they've got a big Generac unit, and he sees that guy pretty frequently. They come out and test fire and everything.
On the startup, a lot of the Generacs are just, it's in them that's programmed. Yep. They just start themselves up and run for 15 minutes, like, you know, once every 2 weeks or once a month.
Yeah, and all your commercials.
The service. But the startup, the generator just does that.
Yep, all your big ones, especially your commercials like Onan and stuff that you see at Walmart and all your municipal buildings and stuff. You guys can buy those. Like, you can get them. Look up cell tower, look up commercial generator on eBay. Kind of take that information and start researching what you want locally.
The thing about the Generacs, and although most of those run on natural gas, so they don't have a problem with the fuel going bad. If you're running a gas dump it in generator, you need to maintain it. You need to run it. You need to replace the fuel in it, you know, siphon it out in a boring time and throw it in your lawnmower and put new fuel in it with an additive. Like, because if it will break, it will break when you fucking need it. Like, that is just, and I'll tell you the other thing too, you guys have your generators out in the garage, especially non-attached garages. When the cold weather's coming, bring the generator in your house or build a generator shack with a light bulb in it or something, because if it's ice cold, it's not going to start. Okay, it's just bleh, bleh, bleh. And then
you're
curse words and angry and wheeling it into your house and hoping there's enough to bring the temperature up till it'll start. Don't start it in your house. Just keep it in there until you need it and then put it back outside.
Plus, so I know I'm supposed to be this badass prepper, but I totally learned that lesson the hard way in 2020 when the tornadoes came through. And then it took us half a day to get one generator started. And I was like, this isn't happening anymore. We are now maintaining these things.
Nope.
There is a spot in my prepper pantry for the big one that we bring it in so it's warm.
And when you do start it up, if it takes like 5 pulls to get it to start, fix it or replace it.
And the creature comforts.
That's your generator saying, boss, I'm tired.
The creature comforts make you very, you know, complacent and lazy too. Like the Bluetooth startup and the electric start on all of your bigger Hondas and stuff, inevitably that battery is going to be dead. Like when they start talking storms, it's usually 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah.
I mean, what would it really take you to pull your generator outside, start it, and not only start it, you need to put it under a load, right?
Let it run a while,
Put something on, some floodlights or something that, you know, actually pulls a load on that thing and cycle it, and then have it all topped off. Like, go get a battery if you need it, or charge the battery, or whatever you need to do with it. And two, now, like,
if you don't have like a way to hook up directly to your house, like a bypass switch or something like that, or you don't have a standby and you're going to use electrical cords and all, get a big bin, label all your fucking cords as to where they go in your distribution, put the bin on the shelf. And then, you know what you could do, Nicole, that I didn't do? Tell your house sitter where the bin with all the cords in it are.
Not only
that, I didn't tell them. There's a bin, and it's got like A, B, C, D, and there's a way that they get laid out based on where the generator sits.
And when you go look at extension cords, right, you'll see the 50-foot extension cord with the triple on the end for $14. And then you'll see the big yellow one that costs $200. There's a reason why, right? When you're pulling a lot of amperage and juice through those things, those cords heat up, like they can catch on fire. So you want to have like the appropriate things, and you don't have to buy them all at once. You can just plug one thing in and run one at a time. But at, each year you buy the generator 1 year, buy some cords the next year. And then the tri-fuel stuff right now is really cool. A lot of guys talking about the 11.5 Predator from Harbor Freight. And that's a big generator. And I have a freezer in the back that has two compressors, and it needs a lot of power to run that freezer unit. Should we ever, it's outside. I don't need to ever run it in a storm in the winter.
Open the door.
But they have the tri-fuel. You can run propane, natural gas, or gasoline. And now they're running, they've got these hoses that look like airline fittings. So you have basically a fitting on your natural gas pipe. And then you can run it through a hose out of these airline fittings. So you don't have to run the little yellow coily, the coily stuff or the hard line. So you could just have I'm going to have a fitting put in at the back lean-to and at the kitchen door. So we could stage that generator either place, and it's movable.
And that thing about putting a load on your generator is very important. If it has only ever run to start and never had a load on it, and then you put a load on it for the first time, that can be an issue. So
our buddy Brandon, brand new Predator generator in the box, pulled it out when the power went out. Guess what wasn't in the box? There's no oil in the box.
Oh no. Yeah.
So he gets some oil, and I bought a generator, a Honda clone at Costco years ago, and it never said on there, "Hey, dumbass, there's no oil in this box." It didn't say, "Go get some oil."
Go get oil.
Say anything. So he got oil in there, got it started, and he still had problems with that generator. He had never pulled that brand new generator out and put it under a load and see if it worked.
And things are broken out of the box all the time.
And he's the prepper guy, 3/8 survival.
Yeah. Well, he'll never not do that again.
Oh, he will. It's brand new.
It is easy to leave things brand new in the box, but
They store better. They stack up neatly, right? It looks, you got your prepper warehouse.
Yeah. I don't know. After 2020, I got way better with my generators. I'm not perfect with everything, but that's something that we actually needed it for days, and we needed it for neighbors, and we had three not working generators on the property for hours. So,
yeah.
Okay, let's go on to something completely different. Jack, how did your cover crop survive this cold snap? Here in southern Louisiana, my winter grasses look okay, but all the greens are mush. No snow or ice cover, just cold.
So don't worry about it. First of all, don't do anything. It'll be fine. That's why we plant a variety of crops. What you will find, though, is a lot of stuff that died isn't dead, and it will regrow from the roots, as everybody that's ever tried to terminate this stuff knows. But you may lose some things. Like, I know that it managed to kill all my daikon. And the way I know that it killed all my daikon is when I walk out there, I smell something that smells sort of like natural gas stink, right? Like the stuff they put in natural gas because it doesn't really stink. And that's the dead roots of the tap roots of, but that's what they're there for, right? So now they're dead. The worms are going to eat them. Everything's good. And what'll happen if you get a multi-species cover crop is the stuff that survives will now spread out, like your vetch, probably winter pea. Winter pea is knocked way back right now, but it will come back, and all your grasses. So I think this year I did barley, oats, triticale, winter pea, daikon, and one other, vetch, just regular old hairy vetch. And the daikon is definitely dead, and we'll see what the pea does. But the pea usually comes back. Don't worry about it. That's what you – and when it dies, what does it do? Flop. That's mulch. That's what its purpose is. It's done to deal.
We've got,
you're
going to
be planting in a month and a half anyway. Well, I think he's down by me. He's going to be planting in right out of month.
We got a bunch of raised beds, and two of them are old. plastic raised beds that are, you know, have a water pipe in them from Costco, and you put the water down and it's got a trough underneath that self-waters these things. Well, they're full of strawberries. Dozens and dozens of strawberries in both of these things right out the back kitchen door, covered in ice. There's 6-inch sheet of ice in there. The ice is now melted down, and you can see, and the strawberries underneath are all still alive and green. So I assume that that brown plastic was catching a lot of heat from the sun and somehow heated that water underneath, and those suckers never died out. Those strawberries
are
still in.
Your ice was kind of like the top of the greenhouse.
Yep, yep.
What killed the shit out of his is you actually get more knockback without ice or snow cover than if you get the ice or snow cover.
Yep.
Because now it's exposed to the air, and what happens is the cells in those leaves, when they freeze, they rupture. That's why, like, if you throw strawberries, like actual strawberries, into your freezer, they're never the same again because all of the stuff ruptures. If you're doing any kind of juice, jelly, jam, mead, wine, whatever, always throw your fruit in the freezer because that rupturing helps release the juices. That's bad when you're a plant, but, you know, your strawberries will be fine.
Yep.
Maybe.
I have a leaf mountain around my outdoor banana, so we'll see if that worked.
A leaf mountain.
Like, I just made a leaf mountain and figured
it'll
probably be fine.
That's what people do up in PA with fig trees. They just leaf mountain them.
Yeah. Turmeric is in the same situation. It's got a sawdust mountain.
Sawdust mountain.
Sawdust mountain. Yeah.
Sawdust mountain, leaf mountain.
Yeah. When rednecks start planing things and making furniture, you end up with a lot of sawdust, which is a really wonderful thing to have on a homestead. That's my observation. So
that's why Florida orchards spray water for ice cover. That's a thing too. We've done that here in Texas where you just turn sprinklers on and it coats all your shrubbery and all with like a layer of ice, and they actually survive better until they don't.
It can eventually happen that they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful things. Have you ever had an ice storm where, like, all the trees are off in the forest and the ice coats the trees, but it's not bringing limbs down? It's just like, and the sun comes through there. It's absolutely gorgeous until it isn't and shit breaks.
Yeah, so there were trees. If you went up out of the holler, the trees were coated in ice.
Yeah.
And we had a really great morning with the sun coming over the hill on, you know, Monday morning after all the crap went through. And it was just bouncing off everywhere, looking beautiful. I always thought that was cool as a kid too, to go out and look at all the encased. It looks like they're encased in glass.
It's great when you're a kid because you don't have to fix any of this shit. It breaks. That's all your parents and your grandparents' problem.
Yeah. Somehow mom managed to make hot chocolate that was warm, no matter if we had power or not, when we came in from flooding all day. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the wonder of snow.
You know what I miss from those days, like the sledding snow days from school and shit? Freaking grilled cheese sandwich and tomato soup.
Oh, yeah.
I think that is the perfect winter post sleigh riding in the like early morning, late morning brunch time snack. I mean, I don't know if there's anything better. And it's so simple, and it's junk food. It's still delicious.
It is delicious.
And you got to make the soup with cream or milk, not water. Water in tomato soup is gross. Don't do that.
That just means you're desperate.
Yeah, you got to be out of cream. Oh, hey, I got to tell everybody out there, you guys want to take and go to Amazon or somewhere and get some of the heavy cream powder and put it in your pantry just as a backup. We used it. Turns out, Nicole, that in Vegas now, the hotels don't provide coffee makers in the room.
Right, because why would they?
Because why would they, right? So they have a cartel. They all got together and said, we're not going to do it, so they don't do it. And so we took our AeroPresses, ground coffee. I took an electric kettle right in the suitcase. But for creamer, I didn't know if we'd be able to get heavy cream, like, without getting an Uber or something. So I bought a bag of this heavy cream powder. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but as a coffee creamer, you can't complain about it.
It this works. One?
No, I'll look it up and tell you in a second. Go on. I bet that would be fine too, but I can look up the one I actually bought.
I was on a flight and they had tubes of powdered heavy creamer without additives in it. And I can't remember what airline it was. It was probably American.
This is the only ingredients in our milk and cream.
Yeah, and I had them give me extra ones to take for backpacking, but like seeing that on Amazon, because I freeze-dry milk, and I use freeze-dried milk with less water, but it's not quite the same as the powdered cream. So
yeah, this, yeah. You really want to put it in water first.
Yeah.
And rehydrate it. Don't throw it in like non-dairy creamer coffee. In your coffee,
yeah,
because
no.
It needs to hydrate. But I use like halfway warmed up water from the thing to get it to dissolve. And one of them little spinny things that people make like fake cappuccinos with to mix it up. And it worked. I'm not going to say perfectly if you wanted cream, but for coffee, no complaints. None.
Some hotels will let you ask them for a coffee maker and they will deliver it to your room.
The Vegas people have gone total freaking
Nazi
on this. I think they made an agreement. Like all of them are like, if none of us do it, then none of us have to do it. And some accountant somewhere figured out what, you know, 3,800 K cups a day cost and said, fuck that. We're not doing it.
Or they have a Starbucks in the lounge.
They do have a Starbucks. And that means that unless you get down there really early, there's a line out the ass and, you know, you have to deal with the person in front of you. I want a half calf, half decaf, no mocha with a wisp of cinnamon. You have to deal with that shit. And I just want fucking coffee. Like, is there a line where I can just get fucking coffee? No, it doesn't exist.
There should just be a coffee line.
There should be a straight up. You should be able to get like a Starbucks card where you swipe it and you just get your own coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't even talk to anybody. No app pre-ordering. You just walk in, beep, and you're gone.
They would make more money that way.
They'd make a shitload of money on that. They would make an ass load of money. And it would also, like, so all those people don't get in the line with all the pain in the ass people. John's sitting there going, I'm going to keep drinking my mocha over ice, and you can't stop me.
No,
he's like, no. I walk into my kitchen and I put a cake up in the thing and hit go.
Yeah. Do you not drink coffee, do you, John?
I do.
Yeah. Oh, you do? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. There's I think he has color roast in there that I gave him in 2020 because he prefers K-cups because they're easier.
Okay. Right? We use hollow roast K-cups.
Yeah,
we
I know.
And Bustelo or whatever the espresso stuff is.
Yep.
Bustelo. He's all fancy.
It's just super concentrated, and it was just easy to do, and they had K-cups.
Of course, I'm mocking him for being fancy as like great microplane.
Nutmeg.
Yeah, we have all the fancy coffee stuff. Like, we could totally open a coffee shop.
You could.
But it's just so convenient to stand there while I'm already in the kitchen doing something and run a K-cup that takes, you know, 30, 20 seconds.
Do you just have a straight K-cup, or do you have one of those ones that makes all the other shit, too? Like,
we have all that shit.
Like a K-cup, but it made lattes and shit for you.
Yeah, somebody gave me one for my birthday, and those K-cups, those pods, have a barcode on them, so the thing knows what temperature to put it out, how to aerate it. Nestle, I think, puts it out, Nestle. And that thing was awesome, man. My buddy Jay showed up on my birthday and he's like, I got you this. And just like everything, I'm like, cool, thanks. I'm going to put it over here in the corner and 2 years from now, it'll still be there. He goes, oh no, you don't. He goes, I'm going to make this right now for you. And he did. And man, it was the best thing.
Yeah. That's how this was. It was like, you know, like cappuccino or latte or whatever. And you scanned it and just stuck it in there and pushed a button. And then the machine knew what to do.
Yep. Yep.
I'm like, all right.
And then it's got a frother built with it and everything.
Yeah. That's how this was.
Yeah.
But then, of course, me, I'm immediately going Gen X and thinking, what if I scan this one and stick this one in? What happens there? I mean, we are the generation that
why wouldn't you?
Into the red ant's bed to see what would happen.
We were also all convinced we were going to be arrested because of the FBI warning on all the tapes we were.
Yeah, we also thought we'd get arrested if you turn the dome light on, the cops will arrest us in the car.
Uh-huh.
There was so much bullshit boomers in silence told us. That's why we have trust issues.
I do have trust issues.
We were lied to about literally fucking everything. Everything was we're gonna end dead in a ditch, starving kids in Africa, or the police were gonna arrest us. Every fucking thing on the planet was gonna kill us. You know, but we didn't die. I gotta give our parents credit. We didn't die. We lived. Well, most of us lived. As God intended.
I don't know. No. My roasting assistant just walked in, and I'm handing her one of our infusion spoons. So, okay. Yeah, there's more over there if you want to take a couple.
Infusion spoons.
Over by the water.
Oh, yeah.
I have. So we launched a new product. We have chocolate melt spoons, which melt in your coffee, which will only ship through the end of March because then they will melt
They'll
in your
melt
package.
In the
And then we have these infusion spoons, which like are a hard candy thing that add. You know, we have mocha, mudslide, and some other flavors. And you put them in your coffee for a minute. It's delicious. It is sugar, though. But I was making sure she got to take a set home to taste different ones. So.
But when are the chocolate-covered beans coming back?
The beans are out of stock, but they will be back in stock next week. And you can back order them right now. Those only ship through March, too. And then they do not ship until it's cold again. Because I don't want to deal with ice packs and overnight shipping. That's why. You can get them in person here when you come to my spring workshop if you don't get them ordered by March.
We need to talk about that, even though John's going to be a sorry ass and not come.
He might come. You never know. No. He just shows up sometimes.
I do.
I'll be there.
I know.
I'll be there.
I'm pretty sure Andrew's going to be here, Jack. We've not been announced yet.
Which Andrew? Because
the one that does the mushrooms.
Oh, okay.
I'm at like 98% with him. I think I need to send the email where I'm like, is that a yes?
You're always pulling rabbits out of a hat. So I was like, is it going to be like Chef Andrew Grohl or something? Because that would be cool. That would totally upstage my thing, though.
Yeah. Well, and then I was like, so you make mushrooms, huh?
Yeah.
So that we can fold that into the food, right?
Yeah. I think we need to do like a gastric or something with mushrooms so we can do like a schmear with it, something like that. I can probably tell you how to do that or make him do it if he's coming.
Yeah, I'll see. I need to talk to him some more because he was thinking about what just normal mushrooms can we have. Yeah. I'm like, but we're doing a ferment day. Like, let's talk about something fun with mushrooms.
I've never done
not
a ferment.
Not that fun, but something fun with mushrooms.
You know what would be cool? Mushroom ketchup.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name? The colonial guy, Townsend, has a whole video, two of them, on how to do that. And I always meant to do it, never did.
I've got a book from the 1860s I'm reading about how to run a household.
Yeah.
That has a recipe for mushroom. It's because mushroom ketchup features prominently in this book, I noticed.
There's like long pepper, and that's where I learned about long pepper.
Yeah, it's really fun. You can actually learn a lot about enjoying your life now from books from the 1850s or whenever. It's you're like, oh, why did we stop doing that? That's delicious, or that's a really good idea.
If you want to know why we stopped doing it, watch The Food That Built America.
To watch that. I haven't watched that yet.
From the end of the Civil War up until post-World War II, like that's where everything changed.
Yeah.
And it was originally just, I want to make lots of money, and I want to sell my shit from Texas to John and Nicole in Tennessee. How do I get the food there without it killing them? That was the original, like it wasn't, hey, let's do this big conspiracy to kill everybody with chemicals. That was the original, and then it took its logical course from there. But that's, you know, we didn't have refrigeration yet, at least reliably mobile. And how do I ship a product from Florida to California or from California to Pennsylvania and not kill anybody? And like I said, then it, you know, once we started that path, then it
and went. Here we are today.
Yeah. But even they were making until like the 40s and 50s wasn't that bad. It's what came after that.
Yeah, so it's Mrs. Beaton's, Mrs. Beaton's Book of Household Management is the name of the book. It's on Amazon. I downloaded the Kindle version for free, and now I'm just going to buy the paperback or hardcover, the spiral round. I'm not sure because I want to see pictures in it for some of the things, but it's been an interesting read. I was reading the soup chapter during all the ice and cold when I wasn't doing ice and cold stuff. And it was really nice to read about hot soups when it's cold outside.
This right here?
Yeah, that one.
I'm buying that shit right now.
Yeah, I'm going to get the spiral, I think, because I'll probably use it. But the things people were doing then are just interesting. Anyway, that has nothing to do with
the spiral round would be better because you can lay the pages.
I can lay it flat. Yeah.
I'm going to buy that right now.
Because we're putting together a library of resources here in general. And I have a lot of good books in it over at the Base Camp Lodge, but that one just seemed to stick out. And I was talking to Alan Booker about how there's no cookbook that talks about using things seasonally or the seasonal nature of things or how you go from a whole animal to folding it into your plan for the meal to use it up without having to freeze it or whatever. And that book covers a lot of that. Like things he's in the middle of writing a book about the self-reliant kitchen, and it covers things other cookbooks don't cover. And, wow. And some of that is if you're going to live in a permaculture lifestyle, how do you build that in without having to go to the store to buy carrots when carrots are out of season, for example?
Yeah. So, I just ordered it, but it's not going to be here till the 20th of February. So apparently the spiral bound one takes a while to show up.
Yeah. I wonder if they're printing that on demand or not.
I don't know. I've also found out a lot of times when it says that, like 3 days later, there it is. So we'll see.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it never comes.
Yeah,
it'll be like, your product's delayed, but it'll be here soon. Don't worry. I'm like, it's fucking June. I ordered this at.
They're like, here's your money back.
Yeah, give me my shit back. And then they have the honesty, why? Oh, I don't know.
We didn't really have it. Yeah. We were trying to find it.
No, when they ask you why you're canceling the order.
Oh, I see.
Because it's 9 weeks old, asshole. Like, even even in the 80s, it was 4 to 8 weeks.
Yeah. Right?
Remember that? No CODs? Every commercial that came on TV? Allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery.
Just
no
make sure you don't complain about timeline on your SOE order.
Oh, we're never refunding. We're not ever refunding you.
You're never getting. You can never buy again if you complain.
We've done that too.
We have zero complaints because anybody that complains is fired as a customer.
We don't offer a refund. It says it on the website.
Yeah. You agreed to the terms. Read the terms.
I've done this though. I've given because I sell a membership. It's a zero cost delivery other than the fee on the merch and things. So I've had people. Well, I'm never buying from you again. And I gave you money for all those years. And you look it up, and they've been a member for like 3 months on a $5 monthly. So they're giving you $15, and I just refund the whole fucking thing. I've done multiple years before. Like, here's all your money. I never want to hear from you again. Don't talk to me. Don't waste my time. I have customers that are important to me because they want to do business with me. And every second I spend with you, I'm not giving it to them. So go fuck yourself. They get so mad. I've never seen somebody so mad as when they're fired as a customer and given their money back and keep the product.
We usually see them come back and order again. They'll order under the wife's name or something.
Cancel it.
Yep.
You see like their head split open and they have a conniption and fire blasts out of their face when you do that to them. And then they think that you're upset about it. I'm like, oh, this is like Christmas and Thanksgiving all in one. Thank you.
That's a Gen X thing, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you lost your shit. Look at my face. What was that movie? Boiler Room? Look at the smile on my face, baby, ear to ear, right?
Yeah. So do you have a recommended thermometer for making cheese? My recommended thermometer for making cheese is 2 thermometers. In other words, have 2 thermometers. That are instant read, and the best instant read that I've found was recommended by Jack at tspaz.com. Get those. And for all the reasons he explains in the article, those work great, and they turn themselves off if you leave them open, which you know I'm going to do. They magnet to my overhead hood, but they're accurate enough for cheese. And the thing about making cheese and being very precise is when they invented most cheeses, they were not precise because they weren't measuring this. So, precision will help consistency over time, but there are also other signs with cheese. So as you make more cheese, you'll get better at noticing, you know, visually when it's up to temperature that you want anyway. I just found out that our cottage food laws changed. Do you know what I can do now, Jack?
No, please tell me.
I can now manufacture cheese in my home kitchen, put a label on it, with specific magic words given to me by the government, and sell it to people.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's not, you just lost your Facebook.
Yeah, I saw it. I don't care.
Anyway, so that's, we have one of the most open cottage food laws in the country now. We can pressure can chicken soup and sell it, which has been a no-no everywhere. You cannot do beef stew, though, because any ruminants or red meat are regulated by the USDA.
Hmm.
but the chicken is not because of that chicken thing where you can have, I think, 20 or 30,000 birds. Anyway, yeah. They did this whole thing, and the caveat it has to be is that it has to be pasteurized milk.
Okay.
So then I went to a session, and somebody said about the pasteurized milk, and he was like, "Well, pasteurize it before you make cheese if you're using raw milk." And he was like, "You have to raise it to this temperature for this amount of minutes." It was really funny, and you know.
Did you do that? Sure.
Yeah, I did.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. What's the temperature that you do your cheese at?
Well, a lot of my cheese, it depends. So cheeses that are thermophilic are going to go over the pasteurization line anyway. But the mesophilic cultures that do things like Chev with raw milk, you don't have to bring it up to pasteurization temperature. Exactly. And so when I make a Chev, it's from raw milk and it's 86, 87 degrees, maybe.
But when they're saying you have to do that, yeah, we did that. Sure. I remember back when they started asking these questions at your doctor's office about things like, do you have any guns in your house? Like, that's your doctor's fucking business. Yep. And a guy that I'm in and out on sometimes, Glenn Beck, I remember hearing him on the radio, and he's like, none. And in the back of your head that you need to know about.
Yeah.
Right? There is a place for just... There's so many problems that people cause in their own lives that if they just followed the rule of keep your mouth shut, they wouldn't have that problem.
They're doing it at schools too. They're asking your kids that.
Yeah, that's you need to prepare your kids for that kind of shit. You know, does daddy have any guns at home? Well, let me tell you about daddy's. No, you don't want that, you know.
Yep.
Did you see some of the shit that went on during COVID? Like, kids had BB guns in their rooms and like they sent the cops to their house and shit because they were threatening their fellow classmates. So well, get my Red Rider.
They were
the Zoom microphone and hit Billy in the head across town, I guess.
So they'll expel kids from school for making the finger gun thing, right? You're not allowed to have Nerf guns, BB guns. And they were, because kids were online school, had a Nerf gun in the back, they would send the police to the house and it would just ensue to this whole thing, right? So now the cops are in your house. Now they're looking around your house.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of shit that just should never happen. That shouldn't even be a thing. But I mean, I still say the one upside to all of that is how much bigger homeschooling is now.
Yep.
How much
they're
bigger?
They're trying to get their hooks more in that.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
That's one good thing we have in Texas. There's literally no regulation at all. There is a statement that you must teach the four core courses, but there's not even any enforcement of that, you know? And I think you should probably teach. In fact, I would say that the main reason people homeschool is because schools are not adequately teaching the four core courses. Now, what we've had is teachers in the family say, well, are they getting Texas history? Because they have to have Texas history to graduate in Texas. They have to have, it's a requirement that they have to. And you say, this is great. What happens if they don't have it? And that's what happens. Dead silence. And like, I'm like, so when do they get this? And it's something like third grade and eighth grade or third grade and seventh grade or something like that. I'm like, so what do they do when a kid moves here from Georgia or California in the 10th grade? What happens then? Do they make them react, you know, retroactively take third grade Texas history? And it's like watching somebody slowly turn up a dimmer switch on a light. As the brain begins to process that this requirement isn't, there's no requirement. It's just,
there's no requirement.
Yeah. And it's funny to me, anybody inside an institution can never see their own institution's bullshit. And when I say bullshit, I don't mean the bureaucracy. I mean, like, things that they say must be done that actually are not rules. They don't apply to me. That doesn't apply to me. Now, I want the kids to learn Texas history. I don't mean it now. I just mean, like, where do you get this shit from?
Jesse, lost PLA casting. You're talking about printing out to make a mold to pour other things into through a 3D printer. Yes, I've seen that. I don't do any of that. A lot of people talk about taking all the scrap left over from 3D printing. I have probably two IBC totes full of it, the pieces and the structures and supports, right? But people talking about grinding that down and reusing that, those are people who aren't figuring out their hourly time, right? No. It is cheaper for me to buy Amanda or have Amanda buy whatever print filament she wants than to try to reuse that stuff. If we're going to pour it, we would just pour it in resin. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I think what he's talking about is, like, let's say you want to make a metal thing.
Yes.
You make a 3D model of it. You put it in sand, and then you pour hot metal, and the metal destroys the print.
Yes.
And becomes the artifact.
Yeah, he's talking about PLA, though, which is the filament for – they've been doing that for a long time. I got a buddy, Jade, from mm-hmm. Starling Gear. If you look up Starling Gear, they're huge in the knife and EDC world. They make beads. They make the beads for our knives and stuff, and they get $2,000 for these beads. And we do copper, bronze, cobalt. We do a bunch of that, and that's how they do them.
Okay, I got a question about K-Cups. If it puts you on the subscriptions, Alexandra, like, email me and I'll take you off. We're having a shopping cart issue, and I have a tech person working on it right now. It's been going on for about 4 days.
Nicole's going maybe Amazon on y'all's asses and subscribing you to everything.
Yeah, I know. No, it's just the K-Cups. They're just subscribing you to everything. But I thought I had that fixed, and I can also make it not renew you. So, yeah. There's a whole – so I had every shopping cart on every website go bad at the same time about 3 weeks ago. And the one at Living Free in Tennessee is fixed, and the one at Holorosa is being fixed, and the one at homesteadskills.academy is fixed. Well, that one didn't go bad.
Who made those?
It's WooCommerce. So there is something that happened in all of the recent upgrades that made things get funkily. And so, yeah. It's been a point of frustration, but I redesigned the whole website too. By me, I mean Scott.
By me, I mean somebody else.
If I sent him a case of coffee, I was like, can you fix the shopping cart, please? Otherwise, I'm going to have to talk to somebody Jack and I both know.
Man. So,
yeah, it's really frustrating, but I did talk about it on my podcast. I was sorry about that. But I also don't, like, make people subscribe to things that they don't want to subscribe to. That's not my MO. So anyway, I guess we're getting towards the end of the 2 hours.
We didn't even talk about all of the crazy shit. That's probably good for one.
Yeah, I listened to your show yesterday just so I knew what specific crazy shit you might be thinking about right now. And I hear you've pissed everybody off.
I did.
Yeah.
I said that Alex Peretti got shot because he was an idiot, but it still doesn't mean that we don't need to investigate exactly what happened, because the dude didn't have a gun on him when they shot him.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. But one of the agents disarmed him. Now, who knew he was? Who knew? I'm going to say this again, so just make sure everybody's pissed. If you go to a protest and you take a gun with you, that's kind of risky, and you probably shouldn't, but you have every right to. If you do that, and then you physically get into an altercation intentionally with law enforcement, there's a very high probability you're going to end up shot or beaten within an inch of your ass's life. And you should know that going in. And one of the things that people do not understand that are not gun people, which, by the way, you people need to shut the fuck up about guns, the people that want them banned all the time, and all of a sudden now it's a constitutional right, you don't get a say here. But when you carry a gun, your standard of conduct goes up legally. Your certain things that you could do that are considered okay, even if they're dumb, when you don't have a gun, that you cannot legally do with a gun without ramifications, and getting in a conflict with law enforcement is one of them. And if you have a concealed carry permit and you took the course, they literally tell you that now that you've had this course, your standard of behavior is higher.
It's higher ethically, too. It's not just
ethically,
legally. Like, you should be aware you're carrying something that's very destructive.
Yep.
So what about the gun he had was a 320? SIG's got all kinds of issues with the 320s going off. Perhaps the gun did go off. The guy that shot him, you're hearing all this protesting about ICE and everything. The dude that shot him was a Mexican dude who was gay. The guy that apparently...
Yeah. You know, I look at it, this is the problem that we have right now. You have two camps of people that are the majority, and that is law enforcement shot him, so it's a good shoot. Law enforcement shot him in the state, so it's a bad shoot. With no analysis of what actually happened. And then he was just trying to help a lady up. When people say something like that, you're not a serious person. And if you get so much as you're a fucking retard from me, you're lucky. Because I shouldn't even respond to you at all. You're not a serious person. And then the people that are like, he deserved to get shot because he had a gun. No, you also are not a serious person. And you don't deserve to be talked to. You don't even get a retardamaste from me. Like, the retard in me does not behold the retard in you. You are an excessive retard. I don't get either of those positions. And when people take that stance, I'm like, do you carry a gun? Most people say that take that stance do. Okay, great. So anytime you shoot somebody, are you wrong? Why do you carry a gun? So I'm going to judge the incident based on what happened in the incident. And not, by the way, not 1 second after the shots are fired, because the person that fires the shots only knows what happens up until that point. And the whole with the popcorn, with everybody opening up, if you've seen what happens in these situations, that almost always happens. Once somebody shoots, everybody shoots. And it's an adrenaline thing. And maybe it's a bad thing, but I don't know that we've done anything to train it out of these guys. And we have to judge them on the law, the situation, and their training. That's how they have to be judged, whether you like it or not, because that's how a court is supposed to do it. So now everybody's mad at me.
Are you mad at him, John? John looks furious. No. He looks furious. No. He's got a big grin on his face.
Extrapolation of the facts, like that's just crazy talk in 2026.
I mean, how long have you been broadcasting?
Since 2008, and apparently I've changed. I don't know when I changed, because this sounds like what I said in 2008. I don't know, John, you were one of my first listeners.
Yeah,
you were listening to me and forcing your employees to listen to me when I was nobody.
You know, the beauty of it is they're still listening to you.
Yep. Okay.
Those guys mad at you, they're your biggest fans.
Yeah, that's true. But I just don't – I back during the – remember the Bundy Ranch thing?
When those James was, you know, Jaeger was
a bad idea. Don't do this.
Yeah,
like, those guys. I was definitely on their side politically speaking. But I Jaeger was like, this is a bad idea. This gives the government. Don't do this.
Yeah, James was out there. All the guys here from Camden were there.
Yeah, yeah. Like when you do that, so the state's primary weapon and the thing they are a master of is violence. So when you go into that arena, you're now competing with your enemy on their own terrain. And people say, well, the founders is the founders. Let me tell you something. The founders took their guns out. They fucking shot people. Right. So unless you're like brandishing a gun is dumb. Let me put it that way. And it doesn't matter exactly how you accomplish that. When you brandish, but you're not actually committing, that other side now has at least some predication to say you're now a threat. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just reality. And cops take it very seriously when they're trying to get a dude down and he's fighting and somebody says gun, gun, gun. Right? That is everything goes up because it's more important to me that I go home tonight than you. I'm sorry. And everybody thinks that way. Now
it's
you're really
natural
mad.
To think that way.
Now they're really mad. That's okay. You can be mad. I don't see anybody. I think I've scared them all away. They all left.
I did. You did. That's okay. There'll be some people on my podcast who are probably mad when I play this. I don't agree with you guys on everything all the time, but we have discussions. Well,
that's because you're wrong.
Okay, that's fine. But I'm willing to listen, and I'm willing to consider it. And yeah. Recently I've gotten some pushback on, well, if you just talk to them, then you must agree with 100% of what they say. I'm like, well, that's not how the world works. You know?
Sadly, well, that's...
And then I'm like, but I'm not going to stop talking to people who challenge me. That's like that's why I like these talks.
But see, now they hate you too.
That's
you're
fine.
Generally somebody
that you disagree with by 1%, you're supposed to hate them. The fact that you agree with them 99% of the time, that's irrelevant. Like, clearly, they're either a libtard or a bootlicker. I mean, they have to be one or the other because they disagreed with you. And you are the supreme arbiter of all truth as long as you agree with them, whoever they are. And in the words of Willie Nelson from an interview back in the 90s, if I could figure out who they were, I would have killed them a long time ago.
Yeah. What were you going to say, John?
Well, I mean, when somebody gives you that stipulation, if push came to shove and you had to be with that one group or the other, which one would you be better off with, right? Which side is actually progressed your life more, which is poured into you and added to you. It's never the other side.
That's where you look at them and go, but I disagree with you right now, so what does that mean I should do?
It's true.
You must be dead to me. Bye.
I don't know. I don't really worry about it much. It's part of why I learn a lot and part of why I think these discussions are entertaining and interesting is that we are hearing things that are real. And you cannot hear things or learn things or come across things that are real if you're constantly filtering yourself because what somebody else is going to think about it. That's just what it is. And sometimes I don't know what I think yet and I need more information. And sometimes I have a different opinion and sometimes I bring that up. And sometimes you guys have moved on to cattle prods and I'm like, well, never mind, you know, or whatever you're talking about that day. So, yeah.
If two people, whoever O2 Williams said this, if two people agree on everything, one of them is useless.
I think this expectation of total unity of opinion is causing the problem. Like watching just the discord in Nashville and the attitudes of entitlement about the power is the problem. People I know well acting entitled and indignant. Yeah. And I'm like, but you aren't entitled to a centralized utility system being up 100% of the time. You just aren't. Like, you should know better. Centralized systems don't work great. That's why zoning's a bad idea. It's a centralized system. The centralized system causes more problems than just leaving it was going to cause.
Until yours breaks when it's not centralized, and then it is all your problem, right?
Yeah.
You're on a well too, right, Nicole?
Yeah.
When your well breaks, does anybody go, hey, we will have your well back up in 12.5 hours on an app? That doesn't
I get a redneck saying, don't talk to me. I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, I'm going to take a bucket to this creek down here.
Yeah. Think about the push right now all over the place to ban burning wood or to ban natural gas appliances, right? There's this huge push. All these brand new municipalities and these new towns they're setting up that can only have electric ranges and electric stuff in them. How fucked are those people right now? Like, imagine, thank God some dudes had wood burning stoves that Nashville said they can't have. You can't have it in your house, so they're living in their shed.
Yeah. We're building a thing called an estufa finca at my spring workshop, which is going to be welded together out of metal, but it's a way to cook by burning wood. And it cuts down emissions by like 60 or 80% from just cooking over an open fire. And then its byproduct is biochar. So rather than looking at technologies like that, we're banning wood. When wood is a perfectly reasonable thing to use for heating, for cooking, if you look at, I mean, there's so much has gotten better with how we use the full resource over the last 50 years. And it will continue to if we let people do it. But that's not how we like to think as a society. Wood bad. Are those
a rocket?
Oh, yeah. I turned my mute off. That was the last bit of the F-35 strafing.
Yeah, I was like, did somebody flush a toilet or was that an airplane?
It's a plane. Now, but it's funny, isn't it, that the same person who tells you that ethanol is carbon neutral when they do it with corn will tell you that wood isn't?
And it is gasification happening in the estufa finca, by the way.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is there's only a certain amount of carbon in that piece of wood.
Right.
And that carbon came out of the atmosphere. So when we burn it and put it back in the atmosphere, that is the very definition that they use to sell ethanol as being carbon neutral. You grew the corn took in the carbon from the atmosphere. When the corn is converted to ethanol and burned, the carbon it releases was already in the atmosphere. Ergo, it is carbon neutral. Just because that tree is 25 years old versus 1 year old doesn't change that. It's the same math. It is retarded. And, you know, I like to brag about Texas sometimes, but we do stupid shit here, specifically in Austin. So, like, in Austin right now, none of the barbecue places are actually using wood. Because inside Austin city limits, they did this stupid shit about you can't burn wood. How the fuck do you make barbecue without wood? And here's, in case anybody's confused, you don't.
it's not barbecue if it doesn't make, if you don't use wood.
Yeah.
It's just it's not barbecue.
San Diego, while I was still living there, so it's over 20 years ago, they were going around shutting down bread factories because you could smell the bread outside of the factory. I remember there was a bunch of that going on back then. There was a real famous place called El Indio's, and they made corn chips. While you stood in line, you'd eat these corn chips. And they were on that, they were up their ass about being able to smell the corn chips coming out of the factory. And this is a super famous little Mexican shop there. But that was happening back then. And now, and that's how they're doing it. Somebody said the insurance companies are doing the dirty work, and they yeah. are. The insurance companies, which you have to have if you have a mortgage, and on my commercial business, they come in every year. Somebody seems to come in and want to look around, whether it's for, you know, the fire guy doing the fire extinguishers, but they're all tied together. They're all tattletaling each other.
Yeah, it's if I stated that my primary heat was wood here, that would keep me from being able to get a LSE. Yeah. So you want to have an HVAC system installed.
Yep.
And that is your primary heat. Now, whether you use it primarily is not the question they ask. But if I'm sick, I can turn on the primary heat if I want to, as long as there's power. And you wonder how upset those insurance companies are that you didn't have a wood stove now when people didn't have power for 2 weeks and it went to zero.
And now you're paying for water damage because everything froze. And then when it came back, it all went. And you can't say, but you don't have flood insurance. It's not a flood.
No.
It's an infrastructure failure. Hey, Farm, give me my money. Yeah.
So
everything has a cost. And that's what you guys were just talking about. Like, they didn't want to smell the bread and shit. This is basically the average person right now, right? They want everything, but they want to see, smell, and hear nothing. They want everything like Star Trek beamed into their fucking house. They don't want to give up shit, but they don't want you to have it.
That's it exactly, right? They don't stand to gain anything, but they're going to, you know, burn your property down or poison your lake or poison your or kill your animals just because they don't have them. They're never going to have them. They don't want them. They just don't want you to have them. They don't see
them. But they still want meat delivered by DoorDash to their house.
Yep.
But they don't want to see how the meat is produced, right? And like they literally live in this bubble, and COVID showed this more than anything, where they think money equals prosperity. So as long as there's money, you can have all the things, because they have absolutely no grasp on how any of the things become things and get to their house. They don't know it. You know, they don't understand anything. They're the people that work in an office and say, but we do everything. And they don't understand, like, well, how'd your building get there? How does your electricity get to your building? How does the water get to your building? How does the fuel get to your car that gets you to your building? Right. The world is bigger than HR, Karens. I'm sorry. Like, there is shit that has to be done to make all these things happen. And some of it's not real pretty when it's happening. And they can't. It is not. I used to say they don't understand. I don't think they can understand anymore. I think we've dumbed people down for so long, for so many, like a good 3 or 4 decades now. There are people that you cannot explain this to them. Their mind will not allow them to understand it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, and they don't want to because it does not serve them.
Yeah. The big panic here is that everybody who has ice can't. Because it's not that they have ice. It's they don't have a proper vehicle to live here in Tennessee, right? They've got these little shit boxes and live out in the middle of fucking nowhere. And now it's iced and they live in a road that's covered by trees. So it'll be ice for the next 3 weeks. And they're mad that their Walmart delivery hasn't delivered to them in 2 days, right? And that's the big thing. So some of these people got on there and said, hey, we have a site, and when you tip us poorly, we actually have a compilation of the people that tip well and the people that don't tip well and the people that are shitty and the other people. And somebody busted it out. And apparently there's a rating that you can see on the app. It's not just Walmart. People work for other companies and deliver for Walmart and deliver for Tractor Supply and such, right? And they're losing their shit over this. And it's just, I don't know what to tell you. You know, if you moved here by horse and carriage and now you're 80 years old, somebody, you better have somebody that can bring your shit to you, or you better have a vehicle, or maybe it's time to relocate somewhere else. But it's, and those, it, that is the most amplified. And when somebody's like, well, you lived in Tennessee, you knew the storm was here. And then there's 800 assholes that are like, how dare you? That's a, what it, they said something to Amanda. Amanda, my wife, was like, we knew there was a storm coming for 2 weeks. They told you to get food and bread and milk. And, somebody's like, that's a pretty privileged thing of you to say.
Well, what's the cheapest thing you can do to prepare in an apartment? Copy canning, like going and buying two of a thing. And so you have enough food cushion so you can stay home for, if you can't afford the car you need, then be ready to be in your house for 3 weeks. If you're,
you know,
diced in.
4 weeks ago, I did a video, and I just said, Amanda and I went to Walmart, and we walked down every aisle, and we looked at every can. And the rule was, we could buy anything that we thought we would want to eat. It had to be stable in a can, and it had to be able to be eaten without warming it up or adding hot water to it. You could buy it, but you still have to be able to eat it, like Top Ramen. You can eat it raw, right? And her and I went through, and we got two of everything that her and I thought we might would eat. And it was $368. We looked at every single thing in the Walmart store, and I was interested to find there is no tops anymore on anything that requires a can opener. It's all pull tops. So I question how long that will last now compared to real cans. And we did a video on it, and it was fun. It was just cool to go walk around, and we did that 4 weeks ago. And then we went and did a video on how would you store this? What's the way to, you know, what totes would you use? And we did that weeks ago, and a bunch of people did that. But 2 weeks after that, they tell you there's a storm coming and everybody's panicking and does absolutely nothing. And they want to go buy salt a week after the fact. Like there was mounds, there was pallets, there was pyramids of salt in Walmart that you could buy in bags of, you know, 5 pound, 10 pound, 50 pound sacks. And now everybody's panic is that there's no salt, there's no propane.
Yeah, a 50 pound bag would have done me if I needed to use salt. Like it'll get a lot done.
Yeah, it's the
only
way
to keep your marina from sinking, apparently, but it'll get a lot done.
We had several buildings collapse here in town.
Yeah, I saw one of your VA buildings collapsed.
During 2019, there was a dude, David Dubine, Adapt 2030 is his YouTube channel. He lives in Eastern Tennessee. And he started talking about Grand Solar Minimum and Maunder Minimum and such, and shift of weather patterns, that everybody was going to degrade by one on the growing seasons. And when we built and started talking, like when we built the rabbit structure and the hay barn, that was one of the things that was in my head. We built them with a steeper pitch. That's why they're so tall, so that it wouldn't bear ice. The ice would come off, or the water would come off of there. And we didn't have anything collapse here. Other people had stuff collapse.
Yep. That's sad.
My greenhouse has made it through yet again. It's been up since 2019. Still fully functional. Farmer's friend. But when I bought it, I intentionally got Gothic arch instead of round hoop.
Yeah.
It's got the point, and it's got the bracing. And instead of 5 foot spacing, I paid to upgrade to 4 foot. So I've got extra poles in there. That sucker's been up there this whole time. There is ice sitting beside the greenhouse right now that's at least this thick, sheets of it.
Wow.
Yep.
I did see a couple guys on YouTube do various versions of reinforcing, like the cheapo greenhouses from Vavor and other Chinese makers, where they basically just, all they really did was make a frame for the bottom out of 2x4s and for the doors, and that pulls all that plastic taut. And they've been through all kinds of shit, and you know, they're 5-6 years old and they still work. And for $150,
we got a 10 by 20, one of those came off Amazon. Cody bought it from Quail. And that's what we have, the emus. That's the pin for the emus. We only use it to feed them, because the dogs and the chickens want to eat the feed. So we let them in there to eat, and then we turn them back out. But I've got a tarp over half of it. So 10 feet of it's covered. And there was ice on top, and it kind of pushed it in. But we've got off the tarp, we've got cinder blocks pulling that tarp and holding it in place, and it didn't collapse. There was ice on it.
They got double the amount of board foot lumber they needed for the doorways in the bottom, and they sandwiched it. So yep. It's like a 2x4 on the outside, a 2x4 on the inside, sandwiched together. And the guy, he was there, and it was like tight as a drum.
Yeah.
He was clearly like a Texas or Arkansas redneck or some shit. You know, he's like, I'm telling you, if it does this sound, he's like, dum, dum, it gonna hold. And he's got it like 3 years now.
Yep.
You can learn a lot from rednecks. They know shit.
So Lee says the anti-fossil fuel idiots would be running around naked if they got their wish suddenly.
And they
would. Because all of our clothing has fossil fuels in it. It's very hard to get any. She's right.
You can't have this, right? You can't have a cell phone.
The thing they're complaining on. Yeah.
What do you think this, just the little case that you, your little pink case and shit, what do you think that's made out of? Fucking elephant farts? Where do you think that comes from? These people have no idea. Your freaking tires on your car have petroleum in them. Like,
what's the
keyboard on the computer that you're crying about the rainforest on is made from freaking petroleum. And how'd it get to your house? And these people, when you go home, do you flip a switch and lights come on? Where the fuck do you think that comes from? A jelly bean field? Like, they have no grounding in reality whatsoever. And we got this because this is what we built. We built these people. The academic system of today, it's like the holy temple of libtardism is academia. And the people paying the bills always get what they want. You aren't paying the bill. They're stealing your money, and then they're taking your stolen money and they're paying the bill with it. The purpose of the system is what it does, not what it claims to do, right? And so just look around and then say, this is why I'm clarifying. I know you're going to want to say, but that's my money. That's my kids' money. That's my grandkids' money. Yeah, is the source, but who signs the check? The guy that signs the check always gets what they want.
Funny how that works. That's why it's bad that your employer is buying your health insurance, by the way.
Yes.
That's one of the problems.
Yeah. Yeah. The HR buys the check, and the purpose of HR is not to protect the employee. It's to protect
the employer.
The employer.
So somebody asked about alternative to salt because it ends up in their pond. It's probably not enough salt to affect your pond. I don't know how small your pond is. But alternative to salt, like we don't use salt apparently on the highways here in Tennessee any longer. We use something else, and it doesn't work nearly like salt work. That's why we have ice out there right now. You could put gravel, and you're not getting rid of the salt. You're just getting traction. You could use gravel. You could use sand. You could use all kinds of things. But as far as melting the salt, I don't know what will work because the alternatives to salt don't seem to work.
I used wood ash, and it helps with traction.
Yep.
That's the same concept, but salt works really well. I think they were spraying saline out here, so I wonder if that's a case-specific thing.
So it's a brine, but it's not salt, apparently. It's something different.
It's like a potassium salt or some shit. It doesn't work the same. Eat when they think they're going to get high blood pressure from salt. It doesn't work for that either. But we, in Pennsylvania, we used coal cinders because there was so much coal burning going on, not just electrical, but boilers for factories and stuff like that. So they stored it up all year, and they did a 50-50 mix of rock salt and cinders, and that'll fix about anything. It also, unfortunately, fucks cars up.
Yeah.
Like a 10-year-old car, any 10-year-old car, unless the guy was meticulous, had cancer and rot on the fender wells and the door lines and everything else. That's the negative.
Fresh water rinse all your stuff afterwards.
Yeah, I did one yesterday, but I'll have to do it again. I was like, well, we'll start today. But if you're going to drive around, you're still getting that stuff up in your car.
Where you live, you can do that. Where I'm talking about, like, winter's 3 months long.
Yeah.
And so you don't have a lot of only thing you can do is hopefully the car wash you actually drive in is operational because all your shit's put away and done up for the winter.
Mm-hmm. All you guys with homestead or property, just like you keep a material bin, right? I've got a material bin full of wood chips. I've got a couple different size of gravel. You can put salt out there, put a roof over it. But I mean, you can put salt like when you're driving past any of these municipal areas and you see that big, huge Kwanzaa hut with that white shit in there, that's salt.
Yeah. Yeah. We use down here because you can't buy it. Like up north, you can always just buy salt for that purpose at like box stores and all. We just buy the crystals for soft water, water softeners.
Those are a lot bigger. You can yeah. still buy those.
Not the pellets. Not the pellets. You want the crystals, and they'll work for you. But we only use like on walkways and stuff like that because it's the problem is not so much that it freezes when it comes down, it's that it melts and refreezes, and then it's like glass.
Yep. Yeah, rock salt and feed salt. I just asked a buddy of mine at Co-op if they sell it. He said, "Yeah, we're out of it." But you can have them. They'll deliver a whole big ass trailer and dump it wherever you want it when there's not snow and ice.
Yeah, yep. You don't need a lot. You just need to break it up, and then you can push it off.
And anytime you have it sit, like I've got, I think 10, 15 bags of softener back there, and it's all a massive block. They started as 50 pounds or so. They're these big bags. Right now, they're probably 100 pounds, and they're solid. You'd have to bust it up with, a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Because they've sat back there for 10 years.
I mean, if you want it to stay not like that, you can take steps.
Yeah, which is a lot of labor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to individually contain it.
Yeah. Is what it is. You guys ready to wrap?
Yeah, we're at like almost 2.5 hours.
I know. We didn't get so. I'm going to go first because I want to talk about the spring workshop, but I can't add it to the stage because Jack won't let me.
Oh, no. Hold on.
You have to unadd yours or something.
There you go.
Yeah. So every year we do a small gathering here. It's about 60 to 70 people at the Holler Homestead called the Living Free in Tennessee Spring Workshop. And it's the 10th year anniversary. So tickets went on sale last week and there are only a few left right now. Registration to reserve your spot is $200 and the whole class is $600. 3 days, 3 meals a day, camping. Here's some highlights. We've got Alan Booker coming out to talk about soil microbiology, hands-on with microscopes. Also, if you're coming and have a microscope, let me know. I've sourced a few, but you're going to actually look at the soil. We're going to look at the bioreactor that Jack made last year and see what it looks like compared to compost that's been around for a few years, compared to other soils in the area. We're building the Estufa Finca biochar cook stove. But you know how we were just talking about fossil fuels in your clothes? We're going to talk about sourcing natural fibers, how to find them if you're wanting to reduce how much plastic is touching your body, and then how to take care of them. Very popular wild edible walk will happen with Carrie Brown. Sander Katz is coming to talk about wild fermentation, and we're doing hands-on sauerkraut with him, I think. We may do hands-on something else. It's going to fold into that 25 anniversary Friday celebration from a culinary standpoint. Sherry Stickler's coming out, and she's talking about building your home apothecary. She's a really great herbalist in our area. If you didn't meet her last year, she's awesome. We're talking about the 5 o'clock club, Unstoppable Daily Progress with Jack Spierko. John Pugliano will be there. I'll be talking about going from homestead to community as the Holler Hub has been growing and what we are looking at happening next. But if you come to the workshop, you're already experiencing the Holler Hub. So if you want to get tickets, I have exactly 8 left and 2 of those are about to be gone or they might already be gone. So you need to get your ticket in now or it's going to be gone. So check it out, livingfreeintennessee.com, and there's like a bar in the middle you can click on or go to events. Jack.
Well, I just want to say real quick, it's the 5 a.m. club.
Yeah.
Not a 5 o'clock club.
Sorry, 5 a.m. I will change that. 5
o'clock means something different, right? No, really. Yeah, come on. I usually pimp my own show, but I'm going to just re-pimp Nicole's workshop. It's going to be a great workshop because I'm going to be there, so you know it's going to be good. Just kidding. I mean, it is worth going to spend that time with Alan Booker for the money. Nicole, me, Sandor, all the people, all the food. That's a bonus, guys. I'm telling you, Alan Booker is one of the smartest human beings you will ever meet in your life. And a 30-minute conversation with him will change the way you look at the world. And here's the cool thing with Alan. It doesn't matter what you talk about. he's probably got 17 initials after his name, that his certification in that thing that you just think you came up with. And he took it because he was bored and needed something to do. He doesn't brag about it. He's one of the most humble people I've ever met. And he's just been a great dude to get to know. So I would come for that. And then Nicole and I will all try to like live up to Alan.
That's basically true. I thought I was smart and then I met Alan.
Yeah. Like he's one of those people like, I'm a genius. No, I'm an imbecile. Like,
John, what do you got?
Special operations equipment. I do a live on YouTube every night. That's the channel. And jump on 9 o'clock every night Central Time. And we can discuss pretty much anything you guys like.
Awesome. Well, guys, can't wait to talk next week. Had a really good time. John, you got to if John comes to LFTN, we might ask him to speak, but I didn't want to bug him about it this year. And he might not want to speak. He might just want to come and enjoy. Who knows?
He doesn't have to speak, but he has to come.
John does what John wants. That's what I know about John. But yeah,
no, we need to make this happen. Like, here, look, we need to, you guys have to harass him or he's not going to do it. I've accepted that he's not coming to Texas. That's just the other side of the state. There it is right there. John, you got to come, John. Look at him all uncomfortable. I'll tell you something about that crusty ass exterior, guys. If y'all get on him really hard, he's not going to be able to not do it. He's going to feel all guilty and shit, and he's going to get in his freaking giant vehicle or his Porsche, and he's going to come. Don't bring the Porsche.
Yeah, she's like, if Amanda goes, Amanda can show her guns.
Oh, let's make Amanda go. Then he has to go.
Everybody has this idea about John. Amanda's the real one. Amanda's the dangerous one. Amanda's the one that you will not bend. It's always Amanda.
She's a badass. She's also a really great person and a very nice person, but also you don't cross Amanda. Okay.
Sales advice. Always pitch the decision maker. Always pitch the decision maker. He'll do what he's told.
Yeah.
We're not disagreeing with you on your assessment, John. We're running with it. You know.
Yes, sir, says don't cross Amanda. True. Yep. True.
Hey, buy one of them blue snakes I just put up for you.
Is that the Baron, the Baron's racer?
Yeah, Baron. You got to get one of those.
Yeah. There's a dude on YouTube that has a whole channel of them.
All right,
guys.
We'll see you next week. Make it a great week. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.